From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Homeward bound circular key coming out gamely on the center of the track, but it's not going to get to Street Sense, who's gone well to you as they come for home now. And it's going to be Street Sense to win this one in distance. Street Sense could not have been more impressive. He runs.
Golden Years digging down for the test for Legal Punch. Golden Years finally getting away in that final furlong. They tried to test Golden Years, but they just can't touch Golden Years in the Maryland Million Nursery.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Into the stretch at Laurel Park. 8 to Fast to Catch, and Forest Voice going to work in that final furlong with a four-length lead. Concealed Identity is charging hard into second, but with a 16th of a mile left to go. At the age of 8, he's still too fast to catch. 8 to Fast to Catch, his third Maryland Million Classic score.
Enjoy the music inching away. Strike up the band. Number 7,000 for the Magic Man. A milestone. It happens right here at Presqu'ile Downs tonight. Congratulations to Mario Pino, the Magic Man, joining an exclusive group of 10 riders in the nation with 7,000 wins.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the Equine Forum, the show that launched a network, all presented by Woodbine Entertainment and all right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Yeah, congratulations to Mario Pino. What an accomplishment. I'll talk more about that in just a moment. We are 13 days, 7 hours and 48 minutes away from the Breeders' Cup World Championships returning to Del Mar in Southern California. Of course, you'll hear all the action exclusively right here with us on HRRN. The only place you'll hear the Breeders' Cup on radio is with us and our Eclipse Award-winning team, and very proud and privileged to be able to bring it your way for the 15th consecutive year. And I'm going to spend plenty of time this morning talking about Breeders' Cup and bringing you the latest on several major contenders. As I welcome trainers Ken McPeak and Steve Asmussen to the show, that's coming your way in hour number two. But as is the case on so many weekends in our sport, the wheels, they just keep turning. And there are plenty of things happening today outside of Breeders' Cup. Keeneland will play host to the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run and the Perryville Stakes. We'll see the Grade 3 Hill Prince and Grade 2 Noble Damsel at Belmont. And the Grade 3 Hendry Stakes is the featured event at Woodbine later today. This is also the day when we celebrate the rich history and the tradition of the Maryland thoroughbred industry with the 36th edition of the Jim McKay Maryland Million Day at Laurel. And it's a special day. If you are based in the Mid-Atlantic Stakes, if you have been part of that and touched by that Maryland thoroughbred industry in any way, this is a very special day for you. Today's 12-race program features races for Maryland-sired horses with purses and awards of more than $1 million. A Breeders' Cup day for Maryland-sired horses, if you will. All 12 races today are stakes, highlighted by the $150,000 Maryland Million Classic, which goes as race 11 at 4:57 Eastern. Mike Pons, who you've heard on this program several times over the years, he, along with his brother Josh, run Country Life Farm in Bel Air, Maryland. He's going to join me in just a few minutes to kick off the program at 8:15 Eastern. Always, always outstanding when he talks about the Maryland industry and he talks about Maryland Million Day and what it means to the horsemen in that region. I'm also going to be joined by longtime racing fan Mike Bagley, who is now the president and CEO of his new water company called Jellyfish Water. He's going to be with me at 8:35 Eastern to tell you all about his new product line and help you handicap a few races on today's Maryland Million program. You'll also hear from Mr. 7,000, jockey Mario Pino, who became just the 10th jockey in history to reach that milestone number this past Wednesday. 7,000 career victories. He rode his final races Thursday night at Presque Isle, winning one more race, which now brings his final tally to 7,001 career victories. And the 60-year-old is now expected to retire to Florida along with his wife, Christina, and they will spend time traveling and visiting family, living the good life. And Lord knows he's earned it. And when you hear me say that he's only the 10th jockey in history to record 7,000 wins for his career, that might not fully sink in. And you might not fully appreciate the magnitude of that accomplishment. But the 9 jockeys ahead of Mario Pino on the all-time list are as follows. Number 9, Angel Cordero Jr. You probably heard of him. Number 8 is Edgar Prado. Number 7 is Chris McCarron. Number 6 is Perry Utz. Number 5, David Gall. Number 4 on the list is Pat Day. Number 3, Bill Shoemaker. Number 2, Lafitte Pinkai Jr. And the all-time leader in terms of wins is Russell Bays, 12,842. That is going to be a very difficult number to beat. He set the bar pretty high with that number. And much like Mario Pino, Russell Bays was always very happy being a big fish in a small pond. Pino began riding in 1977, and for much of his career, he was content to be that big fish in a small pond, riding mostly in the mid-Atlantic states. His work ethic and his integrity as a person are what allowed Mario Pino to have so much success. In order to get to 7,000 wins, Pino had to climb aboard 42,630 horses. You know, they say that you better have your big boy pants on, your big girl pants, if you're going to play this game, because you lose a lot more than you win. And here's Mario Pino, 7,001 career victories, but it took him 42,630 mounts to do it. That's in the afternoons. That doesn't include the thousands of horses that he worked in the mornings throughout his career before he went to work at the races later that day. The amount of work and the amount of sacrifice that all of those individuals had to put in, every single one of those top 10 jockeys I just mentioned, had to put in to get to that elite level is mind-boggling. But it's like that with every great athlete, and Mario Pino is certainly one of them. He was inducted into the Maryland State Athletic Hall of Fame and earned the Mike Venezia Memorial Award and the George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award, which are both given by his peers. That speaks to the integrity of Mario Pino. One of the true good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing, did it the right way, worked his tail off, and now he gets that well-deserved retirement as the 10th all-time leading jockey by wins in thoroughbred racing history. Sean Clancy had the chance to visit with Mario the morning after he won his 7,000th race. You're going to hear that interview coming up at 10 o'clock Eastern as Sean goes in the room with Mario Pino. Should be a fantastic jockey-to-jockey conversation. So make sure you stay tuned for that. You won't want to miss it. And I was thinking about the poll question today, and it's more of a question of the day as opposed to a poll question. But in honor of Mario Pino reaching the 7,000 win milestone, who is your all-time favorite jockey? Doesn't have to be a jockey that's won 7,000. Doesn't have to be one of those top 10 guys. Could be anybody for any reason. And I think that's what makes this question so interesting. I think we'll get several responses from people sharing thoughts of a jockey that maybe has flown under the radar. Maybe a jockey that you've never heard of that rides at a very small racetrack on a small circuit. That's cool too. So you can go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do those things, you can just email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. And let me know, who is your all-time favorite jockey in this question in honor of Mario Pino reaching the 7,000 win milestone this past week? So here's the guest lineup today. Mike Pond's coming up at 8:15. Mike Bagley from Jellyfish Water joins me at 8:40 to handicap some of the Maryland Million races. I'll go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with trainer Ken McPeak at 9 o'clock Eastern, 9:20. It's our industry star of the week. You're going to hear an excerpt from my trainer talk show this past week, my one-hour visit with trainer Michelle Hemingway, who saddled her first winner in the United States last Saturday at Gulfstream. It's a tremendous, tremendous visit. So many of you have reached out to me and told me how much you enjoyed that conversation. You're going to hear about 12 or 15 minutes of that conversation, as Michelle will be our industry star of the week on this Saturday morning. 9:40, I welcome Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen to talk about his multitude of Breeders' Cup contenders. We'll go through each of them one by one, and you'll hear Steve share his thoughts on how each horse is doing coming up to the big races. In the Room with Sean Clancy comes up to kick off hour number three. Again, that one-on-one conversation with jockey Mario Pino. Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history at 10:25. And at 10:30, it is this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin will both be here. And we will talk about several different topics, including Bob Baffert, which he has been a featured topic on this segment over the course of the past 7 or 8 weeks since we launched I Ask, They Answer, and rightfully so. Has he been on the hot seat and in the spotlight, or whatever you want to, however you want to phrase that, since the overage of Medina Spirit in the Kentucky Derby? But now the decision had to be made whether he would be allowed to run his horses in the Breeders' Cup in a couple of weeks. That decision was made this past week. He will be allowed to do so, but he and his, well, not he, but his horses will have to undergo extensive additional testing at Bob's own expense. Those were the conditions. Bob agreed to them. Does it set a bad precedent? Does this set a bad precedent for other horsemen, for other trainers in the sport? I'm going to ask Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin that very question when they join me during I Ask, They Answer. Again, that comes up toward the end of the show at 10:30 Eastern. So a very busy program. It begins next with Mike Pons from Country Life Farm talking Maryland Million. This is the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. Don't forget, on March 13th, we have the Grade 3 Maple Leaf Stakes for fillies and mares, and on the 14th, the Grade 2 Autumn Stakes for three-year-olds and up. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
World-class racing is back at Spectacular Santa Anita, and be sure to join us on Saturday as three-year-olds and up go 1 mile on turf in the $70,000 Lure Stakes, and on Sunday, two-year-old fillies go 6 furlongs on the main track in the $75,000 Anokia Stakes. With a resumption of racing at Golden Gate Fields, a pair of low takeout wagers, the $1 Golden Hour Pick 4 and the $5 Golden Hour Double, are back through closing day October 31st. Bring the kids each weekend to enjoy pony rides, inflatable jumpers, face painting, and more in our infield family fun zone. Fun zone tickets are available online at santaanita.com or in person. Infield admission is just $5, which also covers parking and a racing program. Kids 17 and under are admitted free. And fans, join us each Friday as we offer free general admission and parking, along with $3 beers and $5 specialty cocktails to those 21 and over. First post time each day is at 1 o'clock.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, Pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion, all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They race to the top of the stretch. Forest Fire, Prendini on the inside, battle together for the lead. Tattooed is in third. Clubman and Saratoga bobbed out of the rail. Into the stretch at the 360s in the Classic. Prendini, Forest Fire, head to head now for that final furlong. Tattooed is in third. Clubman did not kick on. It's Forest Fire, Tenacious. Forest Fire, Prendini. Forest Fire, Prendini. Forest Fire prevails. And Prendini trying again. Forest Fire from Prendini. And then it was third in that photo, Tappin' Cat, and Torch of Truth was coming late on the outside.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in the saddle with you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. That was Dave Rodman, the voice of racing in Maryland, has been for a very long time, does a fantastic job, and that was the call of the 2019 Maryland Million Classic, won by Forest Fire, who is a son of Firenze Fire, Frisian Fire, excuse me, who stands at Country Life Farm in Bel Air, Maryland, and going to be joined momentarily by Mike Pons with Country Life. Looking forward to that conversation. He is always outstanding. You know, the history, the tradition surrounding Maryland racing is almost unparalleled. People think of Kentucky. They think of Florida. You think of New York. You think of California. Kentucky and Florida in particular when you think about the thoroughbred industry. But Maryland is steeped in history, steeped in tradition. And part of that, a big part of that, is Country Life Farm and their training center, Maryland. Their slogan says, from beginning to winning, and I love that. They take the young babies, they work with them, and they go on to big things. Country Life is going to be forever tied to the Great Cigar. But they have stallions now who are unbelievable. Divining Rod, Super 99, Frisian Fire, Mosler. Rock solid. And looking forward to visiting with Mike coming up here in just a minute. We are efforting Mike Pons from Country Life, as they say. Mosler is the Mid-Atlantic's leading second crop sire right now. And there are several top breeders who already have runners by Mosler, including Hope Haskell-Jones, the owner and breeder of Depository, Helen Alexander, the owner and breeder of Fort Moultrie, trained by Reeve McGahey. Not Shug, but Reeve. Hillwood Stablebred, Hello Hot Rod, and Clark Brewster, who races Waterworks with trainer Steve Asmus, and all of those by Mosler. Divining Rod has also gotten off to an amazing start. He is the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, with a very small sampling of runners that include stakes winner Local Motive. I like that name, Local Motive. And yearlings that sold last year for $100,000 to Lyle Stable, $80,000 to Patty Miller, and $52,000 to the agent for Gold Square. And expecting bigger and better things from his babies later when they become two-year-olds and then, of course, into their three-year-old season. That's Divining Rod. Those two have become the flag bearers at Country Life. But, you know, the team, Sally Ellen Hurst, Mike Pons, his brother Josh, I mean, second to none in the way that they handle their business and conduct their business. And I think on this day, Maryland Million Day, it's important that we recognize farms like Country Life. And there are so many farms in Maryland that have had such an impact on the sport, not in the Mid-Atlantic region, but nationally and internationally as well. And Mike Pons is indeed with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, good morning and happy Maryland Million Day.
Hey, it feels like Christmas Day. Yeah, it's fun. We can't wait.
Yeah, like Christmas with horses, right?
Hello. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about Maryland Million, Mike, and what this day means to everybody there in the state of Maryland and in the Mid-Atlantic region. But I was just walking through some of the information regarding Mosler and Divining Rod, two of the stallions standing at Country Life. And, man, it's an impressive list of owners and breeders who have supported those horses. And to see what they have done in the sales ring and looking forward to what they're doing on the racetrack, boy, it is impressive.
It is exciting. Josh and I call them the two young guns. And, you know, they both got more than 100 mares, which for a regional state is huge in their first year out. And it sort of built momentum that they've carried straight through. Tomorrow ought to be interesting. Waterworks is coming to town from Belmont with Ashbus and their stable. And holy cow, what a year he's had. You know, it'd be like a little chocolate syrup on top of the cake for, you know, for him to win tomorrow with Waterworks and the two-year-old Lassie Stakes. And then Divining Rod, his first crop, he's got six first-time starter winners of the nine he's got and five starters. So the two-year-old races are key, I think, for the stallion owners here in Maryland. And there's nine new stallions in the state that were well-supported that have two-year-olds this year. So it's going to be a kind of battle royale, if you will, between the new stallions and the veterans and everybody tomorrow. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, Mike, as I was reaching out to you, and by the way, Mike and I are recording this interview on Friday morning. You're listening to it, of course, Saturday morning, which is indeed Maryland Million Day. Mike, I was saying this as we were reaching out to you, and my producer was getting you on the show here. You know, the history and the tradition that Maryland boasts is, I mean, we think Kentucky, we think Florida, but Maryland, boy, they don't take a backseat to anybody when it comes to the history and the tradition and what their impact has been on the sport of thoroughbred racing.
Well, it's wonderful. We've had 400 years of breeding and racing. I mean, George Washington was down in Annapolis watching horse races on the streets down there. Closed Congress for the day during the match race with Seabiscuit and War Admiral. A lot of really cool things have happened here. You know, Cigar being born in Country Life, a lot of wonderful history, new and old, and we're hoping to create some on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and the slogan I mentioned a short time ago, from beginning to winning, because you also have Maryland, which is the training center associated with Country Life. Tell me a little bit more about Maryland and the impact that is having on young horses going forward.
Well, it's really been fun. This is our 20th year with Maryland, believe it or not. And it's almost like having an aircraft carrier when you've got a racetrack, when you've got young stallions and a racing stable. You know, you just launch them from there and they go out to tracks. You know, there's 11 major racetracks within 3 hours of where we're located. And it's fun to be able to be in a bunch of different tracks with the stallions' babies all at the same time.
The Maryland Million Day program at Laurel is a Breeders' Cup day for Maryland-sired horses, if you will. And I've always referred to it in that fashion. I think it fits. It culminates with the Maryland Million Classic, which 2 years ago, by the way, was won by Forrest Fire, who is a son of your stallion, Frisian Fire. And there's another horse, Frisian Fire, who has just really continued to impress at a very, very high level with his babies.
Yeah, it was fun. I went to the sales. We had 10 in the sale here in Maryland. And, you know, Army Mule babies show up, you know, grandsons of Frisian Fire and granddaughters. And that's really exciting. I think he's the only Maryland stallion with a grade one winner at stud in Kentucky. So that's kind of cool to be able to have he could be a sire of sires. And he gets a freaky good horse every now and then, you know. So it's fun to have a horse like that in the lineup. It's like some big power hitter hitting five or six in the lineup, you know, in baseball.
You know, Mike, you mentioned the impressive number of mares that were bred to Divining Rod and to Mosler. And that 100 mares, that's impressive for a regional farm, like you said. When you start going out and looking at a potential new stallion, what are some of the characteristics that you're looking for to know that they can be successful standing in Maryland?
Well, wherever the stallion stands, he must have brilliance. He must have a day where he was better than his competition by a long shot. And he's got to have the look. He's got to have the moxie, the sire power, the female line. It's hard to get all those ingredients. You know, if they're grade one winners, you know, Divining Rob is beaten ahead in the Cigar Mile, and he on the gallop out, he's up five. You know, it's very difficult to get all those ingredients, but we're looking for horses that could be any kind. And, you know, Malibu Moon wins one race. You know, he had two starts, and he's done Memorial Day of his two-year-old year. That's his racing career. I don't know if you could do a horse like that today. It's a little different market and, you know, more discerning. But he was a young LeBron James when we saw him at, you know, Halloween of his two-year-old year. He's starting to book all these mares, and by Christmas we had like 80 mares booked to him. And I said to Josh, is he going to know what to do when we ring the bell Valentine's Day? And, you know, the rest is history. But it's just amazing. You know, you see these horses, and it's fun because the good ones can come from anywhere.
Talking with Mike Pons from Country Life Farm in Bel Air, Maryland. And, again, very much a part of that rich history and tradition that is Maryland racing, as is the 36th Jim McKay Maryland Million Day, which will come your way on Saturday afternoon. Mike, when you think about Maryland Million Day and you think about this program at Laurel, what does a day like this mean to owners, to breeders, and to everyone in the state?
Well, first of all, you know, we take our hat off to Jim McKay and the big Bill Boniface and Chick Lang and Frank DeFrancis and the guys once upon a time that made this thing happen. There was no big state-bred days in California or Florida or New York until Maryland Million hit. And then everybody, there's 28 sort of copycats in all the various states. And, you know, to have a novel idea like that and then have it instantly embraced and just take off. I mean, those days, Northern Dancer stood here, and Winfield's has got to put up stud fees. And that's, you know, that's a really tough question for them to answer. But they did, and they responded. And their endorsement, as well as all the other farms, you know, through all these years, is why it's endured. And it's really fun. You know, when you start building, it's hard to create a tradition, but when you've got one going, it's like a sleigh ride going downhill. All you got to do is catch up and jump on. And it's really fun. Laurel Park, you know, the Sternak Group completely rebuilt the race surface at Laurel. And it did a magnificent job. You look at it, it's got a different color. But it's interesting how well it's been received and how safe it is now. And we're so grateful for them. I mean, they spared no cost. You know, they brought in all kinds of, you know, engineers and hydrologists and all kinds of folks to figure out the underground water problems, but I think they got it licked. Anyway, and of course, 6 months off. And for my guys who love Pimlico like I do, we had racing all summer at Pimlico because it was kind of fun. You know, it was an interesting kind of year. And I was so tickled Timoney even jumped in, and we brought in 400 horses to train there for 3 months. You know, it was wonderful how the whole Maryland community kind of, you know, instead of having a traversity, they made it an opportunity. And it was really fun to see everyone cooperate. And, you know, that's kind of the spirit of racing here in Maryland and the Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, it's a day to celebrate for sure. And 12 races on that card, all of them are stakes races. And you mentioned the Lassie, which is going to be race number 3. And you mentioned a horse earlier by the name of Waterworks, a 2-year-old daughter of your stallion, Mosler, out of a Tappet mare. Steve Asmussen, the trainer, Fergal Lynch will have the assignment on Saturday afternoon, and this is a filly that can really run. She won last time out, broke her maiden by 9 1/4 lengths at Monmouth against open company. She looks like she could be any kind.
Well, it's fun. You know, we've seen Safely Kept debut here and other great Maryland breds. It's just so much fun to see them as these young 2-year-olds and then watch them, you know, blossom right before your eyes. You know, Maryland is famous for great racing fillies over the years, and I'm hopeful that she'll be another one of them.
Mike Pons from Country Life Farm with me on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, before I let you go, you have a voice right now at this moment to a national horse racing audience, an international horse racing audience, if you will, because we have listeners that listen to this podcast all over the world. What do you want them to know about racing and breeding in the state of Maryland?
It's a lot of fun, and it's a very inclusive community. We love to have folks come in and come to the races. Many of my friends come in for the big stakes, you know, Preakness time or in the fall at Laurel, and have a great time. So I invite you to come racing here and participate in our program. It's a lot of fun, and we're on the move as well. You know, I was worried with only 12,000 people at the Preakness what would happen to the purse account and the bread fund, but fortunately through simulcast and the VLT money, we actually had a surplus. So things are rolling here as well, and it's a wonderful opportunity. Folks in Maryland know how to breed and take care of and raise good horses. So anyway, I'm so grateful for the participation of the sales and simulcast when we have big fields. I can you can feel the and see the totals on the in the betting tallies when the money comes in from out of town, and it's going to be fun. And we're probably going to sell the bonds for the new Pimlico and Laurel rebuild, perhaps beginning this fall. And you know that'll be a whole new era for Maryland racing. They're talking about putting a poly at Laurel, just like a Gulfstream. They'll have three different tracks. It could be world class.
Yeah, well, one thing's for sure, Country Life Farm in Maryland are indeed world-class, and that's Mike Pons. Mike, really appreciate the visit here. Say hello to Josh and the team and everybody up there for me, and enjoy Maryland Million Day. Appreciate all your support of what we do here on the network, and keep it rolling, my friend.
Okay, hey, thank you. I'll bet two across on Waterworks for you.
we'll get maybe 1-5, right? She's got to be a big favorite.
I hope she runs that way.
Good luck.
All right.
All right, Mike Pons. By the way, Waterworks is 3-1 in that third race at Laurel later today for Steve Asmussen. That interview, by the way, brought to you by our friends at Jellyfish Water. You're going to hear from Mike Bagley, the president and CEO of Jellyfish, coming up in the next segment. He will take a look and a closer look at some of the big races on that Maryland Million Day program for you. And whether you are a jockey, an owner, a trainer, or a horse player, there is always an opportunity to refresh and reset with every single loss. And there is certainly a reason to rejoice with every win. Whatever the day brings you, it doesn't matter. At the track or in life, reach for a bottle of Jellyfish Water to refresh, reset, and rejoice. Find your case of inspiration today at jellyfishwater.com. And I'm back after this Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the great folks at Lexus of Lexington.
This is the story of a man who was unquestionably one of the very best in the annals of thoroughbred racing at plying his trade in the saddle. His accomplishments as a reinsman were not only noteworthy, but they were watermarks among the riding colony on two continents. The sands of the racing hourglass are poured back to the late 19th century to begin this odyssey. The subject of this dissertation first saw the light of day in Cadentown, Kentucky in 1883. He rode his first winner in Chicago in 1899 on a horse called Abenstroke, and he subsequently rode in this country with unrivaled success until 1903. In 1901, he piloted the winner of the Kentucky Derby on a horse named, perhaps fittingly, His Eminence, and the winners of the Latonia Derby, New Orleans Derby, and the Memphis Derby. In point of fact, in his abbreviated American riding career, he had but four Kentucky Derby now mounts, but never finished out of the money. He won that classic in back-to-back years aboard the aforementioned His Eminence and in 1902 with Allen & Dale. He was third while in the saddle aboard Thrive in 1900 and was second aboard Early in 1903. He rode 161 winners in 1901, a total absolutely unheard of in that day and age. He often said the very best horse he ever rode was McChesney, a horse conditioned by Sam Hildreth. He eventually had a great deal of trouble making American riding weights and opted to cross the big pond, so to speak, to ride in Europe, and there he experienced measured success until 1930. He first rode in Russia, where he won the Russian Derby twice and finished second in that event four times in 6 years while under contract to Mr. M. Lazareff. From 1910 to 1912, he rode in Austria-Hungary for Prince Lubomirski. He then returned to Russia, where he rode from 1913 to 1917. He won the Russian Derby 3 years in a row, 1914, 1915, and 1960, for Leon Montshev, who at the time was one of the wealthiest men in the country. Our man left Russia in 1917 at the inception of that nation's revolution being led by Messrs. Trotsky and Lenin. When he was to leave that country, he went to bid his friend what was to be a fond farewell. Many years later, in 1941, he learned that his friend and benefactor, Mr. Montachev, was washing cars at that time for the Nazis in Paris. The story of our subject's escape from Russia in 1917 would provide more than ample fodder for Jean Le Carre's novel. Many times before escaping to Poland, he crawled on his hands and knees for hours to avoid being shot at by the Bolsheviks. In 1920, he left Warsaw for Paris, and he wound up there writing for Mr. Montachev until 1926. He wrote his last race in 1930 at the age of 47. Compositely, he wrote over 2,300 winners in this country and in Europe, and he once rode 8 winners out of 11 mounts in Moscow. The vast majority of his victories were scored aboard 2-year-olds because he always hustled them out of the gate, rated them, and then saved something for the finish. European riders, on the other hand, went hell-bent for leather throughout and had nothing left at the end. He always felt, although never able to explain why, that collectively, Australian riders were the best. Our man turned to training in France in the 1930s with horses in training at Maison Lafitte near Paris. When the Second World War broke out, he was forced to disband his stable and he turned his property over to the French government, which quartered 200 soldiers there. Then, after France's quick defeat, he was forced to quarter Nazi soldiers. On February 25, 1941, he began another portion of his international odyssey that brought him first to Spain, then to Portugal, and finally back to his native America. Having been in Europe for some time, he was fluent in French, German, and Russian, in addition to English. He passed away in 1941 at the nonagenarian age of 91, with not only fond memories of the turf on two continents, but with a cumulative riding record that by any measure, means, or standards has to rank among the all-time best. His story has the very fiber of what a legend of the world of racing is all about. He was Jimmy Wakefield.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Live racing is back at Churchill Downs October 31st through November 28th with the same strong purses we've had all year, and you are not going to want to miss it. Highlighted by the graded stakes such as the Grade 3 Chalukey, the Grade 2 Falls City, Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club, and the Grade 2 Goldenrod, along with the Grade 1 Clark, this November meet is sure to be full of excitement. For more racing information and to get your tickets today, visit ChurchillDowns.com. That's ChurchillDowns.com.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
The brilliant distaffer Safely Kept is among the greatest Maryland breds ever to grace the racetrack. Foaled on April 7th, 1986, she would record 24 wins from 31 lifetime starts and retire with earnings of nearly $2.2 million. Despite her narrow defeat in the 1989 Breeders' Cup Sprint, she would go on to be named champion sprinter of that year. 1 year later, at Belmont Park, she would add that sprint win to her resume in one of the most unusual finishes in Breeders' Cup history.
A dramatic confrontation here as they come down to the final 16th, and it is Danger who forges to the front. Barkley kept coming back at him. Adesha took a bad step 10 feet from the wire, and safely kept comes on to snatch the victory in the final stride.
It's appropriate to remember Hall of Famer Safely Capped on this Maryland Million Day. Among her many accomplishments are three victories in the Maryland Million Distaff, the only horse ever to win three runnings of that race. She will be forever remembered as one of the greatest Maryland breds of all time. This Maryland moment has been brought to you by Country Life Farm.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Defining Rod by Tappan, Osler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
This is Christophe Clément. You are listening to the Horse Racing Video Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Up front, it is Forza D'Oro and Max Player. Happy Saver switches to the outside for the final stretch run. And it is Forza D'Oro down at the rail. Max Player on the outside. Max Player and Forza D'Oro. And Max Player has the lead inside the eighth pole. Forza D'Oro is second. Then Happy Saver and Chess Chief. They're coming out for the finish. And it is Max Player to win Saratoga's Jockey Club Gold Cup. And the final time for the mile and a quarter, 2:02:05.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. John Embriel with the call of the Jockey Club Gold Cup, Max Player, and trainer Steve Asmussen off to the Breeders' Cup Classic. And that, if indeed Max Player can pull it off, it would be a third victory in the Classic for Asmussen and for his team. And you remember the last time the Breeders' Cup was held at Del Mar. It was Gunrunner in 2017 who gave Steve his second win in the Classic following Curlin 10 years earlier in 2007. You're going to hear from Steve Asmussen coming up later in the program. He'll join me right around 9:40 Eastern Time. Coming up next, Mike Bagley, the president and CEO of Jellyfish Water. I will visit with Mike and talk more about Maryland Million and about his new product line right after I tell you all about today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
And today's first bet comes in race 8 at Laurel. It is the Maryland Million Nursery. 3:26 Eastern is the post. Number 6, Coastal Mission, is 8-1 on the morning line and has a 23% win projection from first bet. Rates 8 points higher than the next closest competitor. Was a 6.5-length debut winner at Charlestown. And trainer Jeff Runco and jockey Arnaldo Bocachica are 19-37. That's a 51% batting average over the past month together. The tandem teamed to win 7 West Virginia Breeders' Classic races on October 9th at Charlestown. And number 6, Coastal Mission, in race 8 at Laurel, is today's first bet. I'm back in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, Mike Bagley has been a longtime fan of thoroughbred racing. He remembers wagering on a race for the first time back in 1985. It was the Kentucky Derby and Spend a Buck. And looking forward to visiting with Mike here coming up in a minute. He has taken that love of racing and he's hoping to incorporate that love of racing into his new product line, which is a water company and a water product called Jellyfish Water, which it's really neat and really interesting. His story is fantastic, and he is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you today?
I'm great. Really excited to visit with you. I was just talking about the fact that the first time that you remember wagering on a race was in 1985, the Kentucky Derby, with a little horse by the name of Spendabuck.
Yeah, that was my first official wager as a probably an early teen. And, you know, I think the first Derby I actually watched by myself for whatever reason it was the 82 with Gato del Sol. And I think that may have been my first Spanish words as well, Gato del Sol and Conquistador Cielo. So that was my first two Spanish words. But, yeah, I made my first wager with Spendabuck. Just I think that was the ultimate hunch play at that moment. And most of your listeners, or certainly listeners of a certain age, will remember he didn't go on to the Preakness or the Belmont. He went on to the Jersey Derby, I believe it was, for a big bonus that he won there. So, yeah, that was my first my first wager turned out to be pretty good, I guess. You know, it's been a rough road since, but like all of us, there's some ups and downs there.
Yeah, you know, your story is so similar to so many people who are involved in the sport today. It was a family member who introduced you to the game. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, sure. My grandfather, like lots of folks, you know, a family member, as you just said, makes an introduction, and then the bug bites you, and it's over from there in a good way. I grew up as a young kid. My parents were out in Washington State in the 1970s. So certainly in those years, there were a couple of Triple Crown races and wins, certainly Seattle Slough. So when we were out there, my grandfather, of course, was putting all his money on Seattle Slough, and that was kind of the early indication that was my destiny, horse racing. As I got a little older, as I said, you know, I would go to the track with him. We went to Suffolk Downs because he was from the Boston area. And then, you know, as I mentioned, the 82 Derby with Gato del Sol and the 85 with Spendabuck. And then I just said throughout the rest of my life, I enjoy the people in the racing industry. I enjoy the races itself, not necessarily just going to the window, but just the day at the track, the people that are there. Both down the stretch, on the back stretch, and just, you know, racing, as everybody knows, is filled with characters and interesting people, and I am one of them. So that's that's how I've carried myself through the years.
Yeah, it's a sport with more characters and character than almost any other industry I can think of. And I remember that particular line that I just used was something that my former mentor, Pete Kulis, used to say all the time, that it's filled with characters and character. You get both of those when you show up at the racetrack.
Very true, very true. And, you know, the one thing I'll kind of add to character is reminds me of one of my favorite series of races was the 97 Triple Crown with Freehouse and Silver Charm. Of course, everybody remembers Silver Charm. But, you know, watching those races, you know, Freehouse came from California, and as did Silver Charm. And those guys just laid it down and showed their character every single race, both from California through the Triple Crown series and then thereafter. And those are some of my favorite series of races when, granted, everybody remembers. And Silver Charm was a great horse, of course, for sure. But it was those first two races with Silver Charm, Freehouse, and Captain Bodgett that, you know, went at it. And then that third Belmont where Touch Gold kind of stepped in and got him at the wire. But, boy, I sure loved the Freehouse Silver Charm series. Those were some of my favorite series right there.
A friend of mine was part owner in Captain Bodgett through the Team Valor Syndicate. And, you know, he shares memories of that horse and those races. And you can just see his face light up when he talks about, even though Captain Bodgett didn't beat those horses, the run that he put in, his face just lights up when he talks about it. And that, Mike, is what horse racing is all about.
For sure. I totally agree. And, you know, sometimes when I need a little pick-me-up, I'll go back and watch those three races on YouTube, and to listen to Davey Johnson's calls, and it was so heart pounding to, you know, watch those three horses in particular go at it. And I always love them, you know, when Davey Johnson says, "And they're at it again, Freehouse and Silver Charm." So those three races are really really fun for me to watch, to kind of pick me up and get my spirits going again.
Talking with longtime racing fan Mike Bagley, who is now the president and CEO of his new company, Jellyfish Water. And Mike, that previous interview in the program with Mike Pons, it was all presented by Jellyfish Water. We'll have another one presented by Jellyfish Water in the second hour of the program. But tell me a little bit more about Jellyfish Water and the concept. You want this water to be a part of the thoroughbred industry, but it's such a part of you too. Tell me about it.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's great timing for you to introduce me and the bottled water to your listeners and to the racing community. You know, on Thursday night there was the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation event that we were a supporting sponsor of, like I think you were a media sponsor as well, HRRN, and many great folks and sponsors were part of that. And not only is that organization, you know, doing great work for retired horses, racehorses, but, you know, the folks coming out of correctional institutes as well. And, you know, I spent 20 years in government, in the Washington DC area. And my background is, intelligence operations for government clients and military as well. So I'm starting a new career after, making a decision that turned out to be a wrong decision. So I'm actually refreshing and resetting my own life and career. So when I was deciding what to do, I thought, well, you know, water is the basic principle of life, and it's something that everybody has to drink every day to kind of refresh and reset in their daily life. And so I thought, you know, I would come out with a philosophy water instead of a fitness water or a flavor water. So on our label is our daily inspiration, and that's kind of what we decided to go with to inspire folks to kind of refresh and reset each day as they drink water, because it's kind of the source of life. You know, life begins with water, and so does our day. So that's how we decided to kind of roll out. It may be crowded on the store shelves with other flavors and fitness waters, but we are a philosophy water, and I think that We express our philosophy on our website at jellyfishwater.com.
Why jellyfish?
Well, jellyfish, you know, is an interesting animal, just like horses are interesting animals. But, you know, when you kind of get down to the science of it, you know, for over 500 million years, the mission of a jellyfish has been to survive, adapt, and succeed in water. So the mission of our company is to produce a bottle of water that inspires you to survive, adapt, and succeed in life. So it was kind of, you know, we're not going to be around 500 million years for sure, but the endurance and the inspiration to do so was kind of brought forward by the life of a jellyfish. So it's not jellyfish water per se, but the inspiration and the endurance of a jellyfish to survive, adapt, and succeed is how we came up with the philosophy for water, which, by the way, is also the philosophy of a horse. To, you know, adapt and succeed and strive to get to the winner's circle each day. That's what we try to do in life as well, to get to the winner's circle of life.
Mike, it was very important to you to be able to tie in jellyfish water to the horse racing industry and to give back to the industry that you have loved for so many years. Why was that so important to you?
Well, I think, you know, quite frankly, it's, you know, whether you're a jockey, an owner, a trainer, or a horse player, or just a fan for the first time, you know, there's always an opportunity in life to refresh and reset, and certainly, you know, a reason to rejoice with every win in life or at the races. And that kind of became our slogan and our philosophy for our bottle of water each day. So, you know, whatever the day brings in life, at the track or in life for that matter, you know, you can reach for a bottle of jellyfish water to refresh and reset and then rejoice in the wins of your day and in your life. So that's, I wanted to bring that philosophy to the racetrack because, you know, quite frankly, every day is a new day. No matter where you are at the track, whether you're at the backstretch, in the barn, you know, training each day on the horses, you know, going to the track, and you know, we all have our bad days at the window, but there's always another race to come up and refresh again. So and reset our wages for that matter. But really, that's the philosophy of life as well. We have to come at it each day, you know, start new, and that's how I wanted to bring the philosophy of the water to people in general, but, you know, within the horse racing industry, because that's what we do each day is we refresh and reset every day.
Oh, what a wonderful concept. And you can go to jellyfishwater.com to learn more about Mike's product, to read the story, and, of course, to order your case of inspiration. It is jellyfishwater.com. Mike, I'm down to about the final minute here before I have to get to the commercial break at the end of the hour, but I did tell you I'd give you an opportunity to make your picks for the Distaff and the Classic on Maryland Million Day today. So very quickly, give me the pick for the Distaff and the pick for the Classic.
For sure. I think Maryland Millions Day is actually going to be trainer Brittany Russell's day. I think she's got the two horses that I have found for the day that that she's training are, is at the Distaff at race 7. Hello Beautiful, granted, that's the early favorite morning line at 2-5, I believe. But along with Mattaket Stables, who are also pretty hot in and of themselves, I think there's if you price Hello Beautiful the number 2 with Little Street Loot at number 1 for an exacta box, I think you'll find some winners there. And in the Classic, again, Brittany Russell, she's got training number 6. Dream Big Dreams, and don't we all have big dreams? So I think that that's the Classic is going to be the favorite Tappin' Cat, heavy on Toledo's the leading jockey there at Laurel. So I think, even though also Tappin' Cat is the early favorite at 6-5, early morning line favorite, I think if you go with the 8-6 Tappin' Cat with Dream Big Dreams, I think you'll find Brittany Russell in the winner's circle a couple of times on Saturday. And so those are I think Maryland Millions Day is Brittany Russell Day. So those are my two picks for the Distaff and the Classic.
Talking with HRRN analyst Mike Bagley here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, fantastic. Well done, my friend.
Thank you.
Visit. Congratulations on the launch of Jellyfish Water, and we'll encourage the horse industry to support you. You are supporting us, and really appreciate it. Jellyfishwater.com is the place to go. Mike, appreciate it, my friend. Good luck.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right, and I'll be back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
The moment we've all been waiting for is here. Racing returns to Keeneland for the fall meet, October 8th through the 30th. And tickets are now available online for pre-purchase. Place your bets during the fall meet anywhere, anytime from your phone with Keeneland Select. New accounts receive $100 back when you wager $200 on the fall meet, plus the standard $100 sign-up bonus. And Keeneland Select members receive free admission to Keeneland. Sign up to wager at KeenelandSelect.com.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
HRRN is live online. Go to our website at horseracingradio.net to stream all of our broadcasts live or listen to the show archives anytime. Read our blogs, get the latest news, and see our entire broadcast schedule. It's all there at horseracingradio.net. And follow us on Twitter at HRRN and like our page on Facebook. Search Apple Podcasts for HRRN and download our latest shows. HRRN is home to racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is at horseracingradio.net.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And Rattle and Roll is moving wide off the turn. Rattle and Roll, top of the short stretch to challenge Classic Causeway. Stellar Tap third, Double Thunder is fourth, and still five lengths from the lead. Rattle and Roll into the final furlong of the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity. Rattle and Roll, the advantage out to three lengths now. Double Thunder, Classic Causeway, then American Sanctuary, no catching. Rattle and Roll, Brian Hernandez Jr. to win it by five lengths on the line. Double Thunder was up for second. Classic Causeway third. American Sanctuary fourth. 1:43.78.
Yeah, no catching Rattle and Roll. That was the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity. That was Kurt Becker with the call. Rattle and Roll, one of a couple of horses pointing for the Breeders' Cup for trainer Ken McPeak, who, by the way, is closing in on 2,000 career wins. He's a couple hundred away, but he'll get there, I'm sure. 0-36 in the Breeders' Cup, though. Really hard to believe that. And I was shocked when I saw that. How has Ken McPeak not won a Breeders' Cup race? He's had 6 seconds. He's been tantalizingly close. Maybe this is the year. He has a couple of horses. We'll talk to him coming up in just a few minutes as we kick off hour number two. Recently I have been telling you all about the new outdoor superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore, and they're coming up on their first year of business. They've been open since last November, and I was down there not too long ago and picked up some boots and picked up some clothing for the hunting season. They have everything you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, and so much more. Owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, the Elite Outdoor Superstore is in Nicholasville, Kentucky, and just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. And with the opening of rifle season coming up for white-tailed deer here in Kentucky just a couple of weeks away, you'll want to make sure that you stop in and see them. Of course, the fall turkey season, all kinds of things. Duck season coming up in November, too. They even have two indoor archery ranges, so stop in and see them today. It is the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. All right, I'm back with hour number two right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Getting ready to visit with Ken McPeak to kick off the second hour of the program. You're going to hear our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris at 9:20. That is an excerpt from my trainer talk visit with Michelle Hemingway this past week. It was fantastic, and I think you're really going to enjoy this little clip that comes your way at 9:20. And at 9:40... I will welcome in Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen to talk about his multitude of Breeders' Cup horses. That's exactly what I'm going to do with trainer Kenny McPeak coming up momentarily. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, the first hour, or any of the show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, and follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And in honor of Mario Pino picking up milestone win number 7,000 right before he retired this past week. Today's poll question at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook is quite simple. Who is your all-time favorite jockey? Let us know. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of outstanding answers to that question. Keep them coming at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And with that, it is time now to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, and who better to do that with than trainer Ken McPeak, who will be making his way out there with a couple of top juveniles. Kenny, good morning, my friend.
Good morning.
Yeah, looking forward to talking about these horses, including a horse we just heard the call of moments ago, Rattle and Roll. How impressive was that win in the Breeders' Futurity?
Yeah, this horse has really come around really nice. We've been fortunate to be able to get him to the mile and the 16th races, and he was begging for more ground and had an eventful start in Saratoga, which was an unusual day. But this horse's last two starts have been monster.
Yeah, he's just continued to improve. What's the thing that's impressed you most about him so far?
You know, his turn of foot. For a big horse, he's extremely fast. And he's also a very intense horse to be around. When he sees another horse in front of him and he handles the adversity of the dirt in his face and such, and he really pins his ears back and he gets after when he goes. And it's been fun to watch. His maiden win was impressive, and this last one was even better.
He was sent off at 8-1 in the Breeders' Futurity, so there were people that did not believe in him. Did you expect him to run the way he did?
We really did. He's a horse that, I mean, we spent a lot of time trying to teach young horses to go the two turns, and he had already done it very well. I think he might have been the only horse in the race that had won it two turns already. And he needed a little bit of pace in front of him, and he got it. And Brian gave him a typical handy ride that he always does, and very proud of that day, especially for the Mackin family.
How do you teach a horse? What's the key to teaching them to be successful going two turns as a young horse like that?
Well, as some people know out there, I do not strike very high at first-time starters. Mm-hmm. And admittedly, it's because we take them back in a race. We try to let them break, settle, let them take some dirt in the face, and teach them to finish through the dirt. And what it does is it costs you your first-time out percentages. Horses, if you gun them away from there the first time out, that's all they learn. And then subsequently later in their career, they can get one dimensional on you. And I don't believe in that. I believe in that first race, they need to understand the surroundings and experience the adversity of a horse race, because we know if you're going to go to another level, a horse needs to be able to rate, needs to be able to understand splitting the hole, finishing fast. And I believe it's repetition. And we do a lot of that, teaching horses to, break, settle, wait, finish. And I think we get rewarded on horses like Rattle and Roll and some others over the years. And that first time out's not as big a deal as people think it is. It's not a strike rate that to me is important in the long run.
Well, and to that point, all of those things you just mentioned were on full display with Rattle and Roll's debut at Churchill in June, where he was far back early. He got off a bit slow, but then picked it up. He weaved through traffic and ended up finishing third. He came from 11th to third, and all of those things you just mentioned were on display in that 1/6-furlong race.
All we did was teach him how to run, and now he gets it. And yesterday we ran a filly that's interesting, Dunvegan Doll. She was way back early, and then she came in split horses, and she gets beat. I think she was sixth, got beat eight lengths, but galloped out several in front by the time they made the turn. So now she's ready for her next dance. And I love doing that. Like I said, it's there's a initial, okay, that first start. And if you get one that wins first time out anyway with us, wow, you better tie on.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Saratoga debacle that was on August 26th when he bolted and was pulled up. I mean, it was just a nightmare. I'm sure you've gone back and watched that race a million times, Kenny. What went wrong?
Well, the only conclusion we could come to is he got hit in the eye. That evening and the next day, the horse's eye was half closed and it was draining. And I think something, whether it was a shoe full of sand thrown in his eye or a rock or something that really struck him, but he threw his head to the right, and I think Jose Ortiz thought that the horse was injured, so he did the right thing and just went ahead and pulled him up. We were kind of miffed because it looked like in that race until that moment he was going to win easy.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty sure he would have, but these things happen, and you just have to take a deep breath and figure it out. But that's the only thing we could come up with. He's never done anything before that or since that. So It's certainly in our viewpoint a complete toss and just one of those unfortunate racing incidents that doesn't go well. I got a little hate mail over that. Some guy sent me messages saying this and that, and I'm like, well, you don't actually realize what happened, do you? So we'll ignore this.
The perils of being a horse trainer.
Yeah.
You know, Kenny, if I didn't see the three letters MDN in front of the purse money in the past performances, I would have thought they were stakes races that this horse was running in. How great is it right now, if you're a horse owner, to be able to compete in maiden races that are $100,000 and $120,000?
Well, it's competitive. You know, you better come to gunfight with a machine gun. I mean, you better have a really good horse to go over there. The Churchill Downs and even Keeneland Racing and now Turfway's purses are going up. And so the Kentucky circuit, and we're not a 5 or 6 horse field circuit either. You've got to do it against typically 12 and 12 really talented horse trainers and jockeys that are bringing quality stock to the races. So, you better come with your A game.
Rattle and Roll is now a grade one winner, which means the world looking ahead to what could be stallion prospects for him. What do you do now, Kenny? He's obviously on top of his game. He's happy. What do you do between now and the Breeders' Cup with him?
Well, he just gets a couple of maintenance half miles, 5/8 mile breezes. You don't need to overtrain for these races. You just need to keep him on even keel. He gallops really strong himself anyway, and he goes out there and he's got a huge long stride. He's got the fitness. Now it's just maintaining. So going back to how our progression of horses, the first start's typically good, second's better, third's best, and then you want to keep that even level for the next start too. And I think he's, you know, set right on it. He is going to be a horse that needs a little pace in front of him, but that's out of our hands.
Your grade two Bourbon Stakes winner, Tis the Bomb, has kind of had a similar progression where his debut effort was just kind of a teaching moment, and then he comes back, breaks his maiden by 14, takes the Kentucky Downs Juvenile, and then the grade two Bourbon. Tell me more about Tis the Bomb and what you're seeing from him.
Well, this horse could very easily have won the Breeders' Futurity himself. He's equally as talented on the dirt as he is on the turf. And I guess, fortunately, I think everything plays out for a reason sometimes. I could have run him in the Futurity, and the owner, Phoenix, had another horse going into the Futurity that they had with Todd Pletcher. So I just opted over to the turf race because Brian Hernandez, I was going to have to decide which horse he rode. And so it works out really well that they were separated. Although Tis the Bomb, I'm going to tell you, after the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, we'll probably move back over to the dirt for his three-year-old season.
Oh, wow. Well, that 14-length maiden win on the dirt at Ellis Park and the off-the-turfer certainly says that he can handle it.
Yeah, no problem whatsoever. I mean, he's a very, very talented horse and dirt, turf, he's very versatile, and it's going to be fun, you know, fingers crossed everything goes well, but it's going to be a really fun spring going into, you know, Derby and Oaks and such. We've got some really live bullets.
You know, last week Neil Pessin was on the program, and he was talking about the process now that trainers have to go through shipping horses around the country with no Tex Sutton. It's all done through FedEx, and that creates some issues. Any concerns on your end, Kenny, with trying to get these horses out to Del Mar?
Well, yes, a little bit. I mean, the van ride to Indianapolis, we're going to have to prepare for that. And that really is the only difference. You know, I was glad to hear that they're flying directly into San Diego as opposed to Los Angeles. I know that we tried to logistically take a horse to Del Mar earlier in the year, and we were going to have to van, I can't remember, I believe it was Indianapolis, fly to Los Angeles, then van to San Diego, so it was going to be a pretty stressful trip, but they'll get it together. It sounds to me like that they're working it out, and they've got a full plane load going, and or actually a couple, and you know, these things are out of our hands, but it shouldn't be a big deal.
Going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with trainer Ken McPeak. Again, those two very talented juveniles looking to give Kenny his first Breeders' Cup win. And Ken, I have to tell you, when I say those words, they almost don't make sense. There's no way that Ken McPeak has not won a Breeders' Cup race yet with all the success you've had. But, man, you've been so close on so many occasions. Hopefully this is the year, my friend.
Well, I think I have probably the very best and worst Breeders' Cup record. I think I'm in the money more than anybody, but as a percentage, because we run second and third so many times and a few fourths. I think I've 15 or 16 seconds and thirds.
Yeah.
You know, those races are there, you know, and we've done it with I'm going to say some modestly priced young horses. Tahana Rum was only 20 grand and She's a Devil Do. These are the early years. You know, Dream Empress was, I think, 60 or 70. And we had Rosalind, who was second. She was only 70. And, you know, look, if your horses run well, if you run second or third or better, it's usually a really good day. I mean, typically that's what, 200,000 to run third.
Yeah.
It's not like it's a bad weekend. So we don't put any energy into all that. We'll get ours when we get ours.
What was the most gut-wrenching runner-up or third-place finish that you can recall?
Probably Beautician. And Beautician made the lead at about the 16th pole, and Julian Le Perroux was on Wayne Catalano's filly, and she snuck up inside of her and beat her right at the wire. And that was a kind of a dang it moment. I wanted to win that for Peter Callahan. And then I've had quite a few of them that were just so close, yet, you know, no cigar. But anytime, like I said, you're competitive in those, and all the better. It's a great day of racing, and they do a great job putting it on. And we've always come out of there with some checks to cash, and I guarantee we're going to do it again this year.
Yeah, I would say so. Two live chances for Ken McPeak. Tis the Bomb pointing for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, and then Rattle and Roll going for the Juvenile. Kenny, listen, man, I always appreciate the visit. It's always great to catch up with you, and you're always very gracious with your time. Good luck in the Breeders' Cup, and keep it rolling.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Ken McPeak here on the Horse Racing Radio Network going down the road to the Breeders' Cup this morning. Yeah, just mind-boggling when you say those words, Ken McPeak trying to win his first Breeders' Cup. 0 for 36 in the Breeders' Cup races, but 6 seconds. And you heard him say his percentage, the best record and the worst record. In terms of wins, yeah, he's never won. But in terms of being in the money, his percentage is very high. So something to keep in mind when you're putting those tickets together and you start looking at trifectas and superfectas and trying to spread out a little bit, don't be afraid to throw in Rattle and Roll and Tis the Bomb. Rattle and Roll, 8-1 in the Breeders' Futurity last time. You heard me mention that to Kenny. I don't think you're going to get 8-1 on Rattle and Roll in the Breeders' Cup. I could be wrong. You know, that's the beauty of the Breeders' Cup. I talked about it last week, the fact that you get grade one winners like a Rattle and Roll who go off at big prices that you'll probably never see again. But the way that this horse performed, throw out the Saratoga debacle, the way that this horse performed his last two starts going long on dirt, two turns, he'll be a force. 8-1 would be very, very generous. Don't think you get that on Rattle and Roll. And my thanks to Ken McPeak for being here this morning to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. When I come back, it's your Industry Star of the Week segment presented by Stuart Morris. You will not want to miss this. Steve Asmussen still to come at 9:40 Eastern and a visit with Mr. 7000, Mario Pino, as we go in the room at 10 o'clock Eastern. This is the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The moment we've all been waiting for is here. Racing returns to Keeneland for the fall meet, October 8th through the 30th. And tickets are now available online for pre-purchase. Place your bets during the fall meet anywhere, anytime from your phone with Keeneland Select. New accounts receive $100 back when you wager $200 on the fall meet, plus the standard $100 sign-up bonus. And Keeneland Select members receive free admission to Keeneland. Sign up to wager at KeenelandSelect.com.
World-class racing is back at spectacular Santa Anita, and be sure to join us on Saturday as three-year-olds and up go 1 mile on turf in the $70,000 Lure Stakes, and on Sunday, two-year-old fillies go 6 furlongs on the main track in the $75,000 Anokia Stakes. With a resumption of racing at Golden Gate Field, a pair of low takeout wagers, the $1 Golden Hour Pick 4 and the $5 Golden Hour Double, are back through closing day October 31st. Bring the kids each weekend to enjoy pony rides, inflatable jumpers, face painting, and more in our infield family fun zone. Fun zone tickets are available online at santaanita.com or in person. Infield admission is just $5, which also covers parking and a racing program. Kids 17 and under are admitted free. And fans, join us each Friday as we offer free general admission and parking, along with $3 beers and $5 specialty cocktails to those 21 and over. First post time each day is at 1 o'clock.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
She's Amaya, Fontana Freda, and Robin and Eli. The three of them will battle down to the finish, and it's going to be She's Amaya, and she's a huge price, 62-1.
She's Amaya, the two-year-old daughter of Darley freshman sire Astern, became the eighth first crop winner for her sire last Saturday, winning that maiden specialweight race at Belmont Park. That's a victory that makes She's Amaya your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Astern, Medaglia d'Oro's fastest son at stud. Astern has 4 first crop stakes horses, including Grade 2 Miss Grillo winner Sail By. That's exactly the same number his sire, Medaglia d'Oro, had at the same stage of his career. Learn more about Astern and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Join the Maryland Jockey Club for the 36th running of Jim McKay Maryland Million Day, Saturday, October 23rd at Laurel Park. Come with friends and family to Maryland's Day at the Races. Enjoy a full day of racing with on-track entertainment between races. It will be fun for all at Laurel Park, Saturday, October 23rd. First post, 11:30 a.m. The 36th running of Jim McKay Maryland Million Day.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. It is time now for your Industry Star of the Week segment, presented every Saturday by Stuart Morris, who, of course, offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation and wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, Pacific Gale, and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales. Well, this past Wednesday night, I had the chance to visit with trainer Michelle Hemingway on my trainer talk show presented by Fasig Tipton. Michelle saddled her first U.S. horse and her first U.S. winner last Saturday at Gulfstream. Manor House won the 9th race at Gulfstream Park, and for Michelle, it was very special. She came from the show horse world. She had spent time working with some of the most prominent trainers in South Africa, and now she is here in Florida saddling horses, and that was a big win, an emotional win for her. And she started our conversation looking back on that big win.
Yeah, it was really exciting. I don't think, for as many different horses as I've had the pleasure to be involved with, I don't think there was anything quite as special as that.
It's interesting to hear you say that, because you have saddled Grade 1 winners, but this was not a Grade 1. It was not a Grade of Stakes, and it meant so much to you, which a lot of people would say, boy, there's no way that can mean as much as the Grade 1 winners.
No, it really did. I'll be honest with you. I really have to thank Nick Saluso for the opportunity with this horse and his faith in me. And I think it was just, it just felt so different because he was a project, everything. He kind of became, he kind of became my boyfriend, right? My boyfriend joked, hey, you treat him better than me. So I think it sort of became that sort of thing. So I think it was just that much more special. I mean, the Grade 1 winners in my past, they've been wonderful, but there's really nothing like this with this horse.
You said afterwards, when you were standing in the winner's circle, you said, I'm crying like a little girl. that is what this sport is all about, right? That emotion and that emotional connection with the horse, it just means so much.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, this horse was really special to me, and it was just everything coming together, and I really was. I was so overcome by emotion, it came out my eyeballs. That happens to me a lot, but it definitely came out my eyeballs in that situation.
You mentioned Nick Sallusto. Tell me a little bit about that relationship there.
Nick has just been incredible. I have known Nick really for most of my life, you know, with his father being a trainer and our backgrounds coming together. I've known him most of my life, and I've always really wanted to have the opportunity to sort of work with him because I think he's quite a talented horseman. And, you know, we came together, I'm going on about 2 months ago now. And he offered me a position, and I took it, and it's turned out to be the best decision I've ever made.
Manor House was coming off of a long layoff, too. Did you spend a lot of time working with Manor House to get him ready for the race?
Yeah, I mean, I think we spent 271 days all together, and then, you know, quite a special training program, and there's a whole team of us here at Thoroughstock. It's definitely, you know, it's a team effort. Without every member of this team, the horse wouldn't have done what he did. So I'm just so appreciative of every single member. Nick Sallusto, Jimmy Randolph, our foreman Luis, our farriers. I'm just so pleased that everyone was able to come together and put this horse back together to make him what I know he can really be.
What things do you look for as the trainer that tell you, okay, he's ready to take the next step and keep going forward?
You know, obviously you're always watching their coat, the way they move, the look in their eye, how they take to their training. If they're a little tired on the track, you're obviously going to take that into account. If they're above themselves, you're going to take that into account at the same time. I think so many trainers feel like, okay, the horse is above himself, he's really ready to go, when really it might be the opposite. He's so above himself that he's going to not run to his ability. It's honing his energy or her energy into the spot where it's supposed to be so they can get their prime physical activity in that race.
How long does it take you to know that when you start working with a horse?
Honestly, it's funny. This horse, the first time I saw him and I looked at him in the stall, I just had a feeling. He has a presence. And he has a class about him, and you really get a feeling. And that was before I ever even watched him train on the track. And then as I watched him train on the track, every little thing you asked him to do, he would do, and he would do better. So he was kind of like that student in school that's working to go to Yale, that doesn't do just enough, but goes above and beyond each and every time without being overcooked or overpressured, just does it very easily.
So how does a girl that comes from the show horse world become so involved with thoroughbreds and eventually find herself working in South Africa? I think that's fascinating.
Well, like I said, I always rode show horses, but I always galloped race horses for my father in the morning before I went to school because my dad was a thoroughbred trainer. So I always sort of had to wear both hats. And when I was lucky enough, when I was riding the show horses, that my aunt took me to Mexico and Canada to compete on the show jumpers. And then my father, as a racehorse trainer, had been in Canada, England, Iran. Actually, he trained for the Shah of Iran. And I just knew when I was coming out of university, I wanted to get a job in horse racing where my family had never been. And an opportunity was presented to me in South Africa through a breeding farm there, which was called Farsfontein. And across from them was a trainer called Glenn Cotson, and he hired me as an assistant out of college.
Do you remember when you must have been excited to make the trip over there, but were there some nerves involved too as you were making that move?
I mean, yes, but I had the experience through college to travel back and forth each year and get to know people there. It was definitely a different feeling the day that I walked into Dulles Airport to say goodbye to my dad, and I was getting on the plane and say goodbye to my mom, and I was getting on the plane and I was like, okay, I'm going to South Africa again, but this time I don't know when I'm coming back. That was definitely a nervous feeling, but also an exciting feeling. It was time to, you know, stand on my own two feet and figure it out.
You know, I have to tell you, you just hit me up with something else that I wasn't aware of. You said that your dad trained for the Shah of Iran. I didn't even know that there was horse racing in Iran.
Yeah, in the 70s, when the Shah was in power, he used to have a place called the Imperial Palace. And my aunt was living over there with her husband, who was working for Reynolds Aluminums, and she was riding show jumpers at the Imperial Palace. And they used to have a large Arabian race every year that was the most prestigious race they had in Iran. And the Shah said to my aunt, I need someone who can train my Arabians to get ready for this race. And she said, well, my brother does that. And so they flew my father over to Iran, and he trained his Arabs for 2 years to run in this race, and he won it. So it was quite an experience. My aunt still loves Iran very much. She's written, I think, 4 books to date about her time in Iran.
Wow. All right, let's talk a little bit more about your time then in South Africa. Tell me a little bit more about getting started over there and some of the things you experienced when you got to South Africa.
Well, Glenn was great. He owned a beautiful farm. We had 120 head in training at the lowest time. He was where I started, and his farm was about an hour outside of Cape Town. And they have racing 7 days a week in South Africa, just in a different area of the country each day. And it was interesting to learn to get over there and see how different the training techniques are over there versus what they are here. I was with Glenn for my first couple of years there, and then I got offered a job with Joey Ramsden, who is actually a native of England, and he was training right down in Cape Town at a training center called Milnerton. I ended up going on and taking the job with Joey because I was offered my own yard. So the way it works there is, they have sort of the way we have here on the East Coast, for example, the prestigious meet in the summertime is Saratoga, and the prestigious meet in the wintertime is Gulfstream.
Mm-hmm.
In South Africa, they have it. The prestigious meet in the summertime is Cape Town. The prestigious meet in the wintertime is Durban. They're across the country from each other. So going to work for Joey, the first 6 months I worked for him in Cape Town, and then the second 6 months, I worked for him running his entire yard in Durban. So I was in charge of his yard, which is actually how I got involved with Michael de Kock, because he and Joey were best friends. So any time that Michael was in Dubai, we had his horses with Joey. So I was essentially able to manage a lot of Michael's horses through my involvement with Joey.
You mentioned that the training approaches are a bit different, and some of the things that are done there are different than we do here in the United States. What are some of the biggest differences, Michelle?
Well, for example, we, at every yard, no matter what training center you're at, all the horses go out in three sets. So if you have 120 horses, do the math, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have 40 horses go out per set. But what happens is each groom has their own saddle, and they have to be able to at least post. So all 40 horses come out. They jog basically a half a mile in a jogging ring before they go out to the track, and then they ring, and you have a filly's ring and a colt's ring, and then you separate and you put the work riders on and you send them out to do their work in the morning. Every Monday in South Africa basically is just what we call a canter day. Tuesdays can be pace work, which is when you pair two horses together and teach them to sort of pull each other along. Wednesdays would be a jog day. Thursdays would be pace work. Fridays would be a grass gallop, which would be essentially like our breeze, or Saturdays, and we would vary their training like that. But not only that, not only is the pace different, other than basically one oval track in the whole country, almost every track is straight and either up and down a hill, and each track has a different surface. So one would be called the heavy sand, the beach track, the light sand, the cinders, and you would choose where you wanted your horse to train based on the depth of the racetrack you wanted them to be on.
Wow. Do you think that's a more effective approach than what we have here in the United States, or is it just simply different?
I wouldn't say it's more effective. I'd say it's just very different. I do think that, to be honest, I saw a lot less soft tissue injury because
yeah.
You could change the depth in the horse's training based on their needs. So I did see a lot less soft tissue injuries in my time there than I did here.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Do you think that the horses in South Africa are, Well, let me put it this way. I've always said that when you see a South African-bred horse that's been racing in South Africa and they come here to the United States, they are tough as nails. And I've said that many years. Do you find that they're tougher horses in South Africa than we have here?
They're definitely tough horses. I mean, one of the horses that I loved to gallop over there that was one of my grade one winners, and he was an excellent stayer, was a horse called Major Bluff. And he only retired when he was about 12. And he was just a lovely, lovely animal. So I think they definitely have a lot more fortitude about them. There's a lot of strength bred into the breed. But I think, you know, I'm hopeful that we're going to get back into that sort of direction here in the States.
Yeah, of course, because of the economics of the industry here in the States and the fact that, you know, horses after their three-year-old campaigns, if they're successful, are worth so much money. We see a lot of these horses go to stud, and we don't have a chance to see them as older horses. Is that different in South Africa too, Michelle, where horses will compete into their maybe five, six, seven-year-old years?
Oh, yeah, because they're a lot quicker to geld them over there, the colts for sure. I mean, I'll be honest, they don't deal with as many problem behaviors over there as especially with the colts as we do here, based on, you know, breeding value or stallion value. If the horse, the way they think of it over there, okay, the horse can be the greatest horse in the world, but if it can't run based on pedigree, but if it can't run to its ability because of behavioral issues, then they're very quick to castrate them.
Yeah. You know, people may not be as familiar with Joey Ramsden and Glenn Coatson, who you mentioned, but they are familiar with Michael DeCock. We've seen him here in the United States, and he's made a name for himself as one of the best international trainers based in South Africa. What is it about a person like Michael DeCock that makes him such a good trainer?
He is a brilliant person. I mean, he has almost, my experience with him was, I feel he has almost a photographic memory. He can sit there and watch the horse train, and he'll tell you exactly what to do. He really understands horses. I mean, one of the ones that I got to work with him was a horse called Asiatic Boy. Mm-hmm. And he won the Derby in Dubai, and he was just a phenomenal horse, but he was a little bit of a challenging horse. And I got to see Mike and see the way, you know, he worked with that horse and what he taught him and how he dealt with him. And then another one was that filly Iridescence that was unfortunately got scratched in the Dubai World Cup day when she kicked, you know, the side of the rail and damaged her pedal bone, and it was a mess and he had to scratch her. You know, it was amazing to watch him and watch what he did. But I think for me, a filly that was very special that actually didn't have anything to do with Michael DeCock, but did have something to do with Glenn Coatson, and now has some ties here to the United States, was when I first moved there, the first filly that I had the opportunity to oversee was a filly called Alexandra Rose. Mm-hmm. And we ended up selling her for quite a lot of money to Australia. And she is actually the dam of a filly that Team Valor owns called Alexandra.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sure most of these trainers will be familiar. Alexandra's become one of the better turf fillies in the country. And that Alexandra Rose was her mother. So it's nice to get to follow that and see it together. I know that, you know, with our connections here going into the Breeders' Cup between Bella Sophia, Mind Control for the Mile, and then my personal connection with Warlike Goddess for the turf, I've been really watching a lot of turf racing, and it was just neat to see Alexandra go forward and me having had Alexandra Rose and watch the family progress.
Oh, that is just 15 minutes of my full hour-long conversation with Michelle Hemingway, and you can see why so many people reached out and said they enjoyed it. She is brilliant, and she is a rising star in the sport of thoroughbred racing. You can head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the entire show, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, that podcast available for you now. And Michelle is indeed this week's Industry Star of the Week. When I come back, I welcome another star. That is the all-time leading trainer in the history of thoroughbred racing, Steve Asmussen. We'll walk through all of his Breeders' Cup contenders. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup runs here, coming November 5th and 6th, exclusively on HRRN.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Broken Proposal, a two-year-old daughter of Broken Vow, goes for her first added money crown in the $250,000 Princess Elizabeth Stakes, one of two features on Saturday's 10-race card at Woodbine, which also includes the Grade 3 $150,000 Hendry Stakes. 10 starters are slated to go postward in the 76th renewal of the Princess Elizabeth, a mile and a 16th main track race for Canadian-bred two-year-old fillies. Trained by Stuart Simon, Broken Proposal, who is a Samson homebred, finished second in her career debut on October 1st in a one-mile race over the E.P. Taylor Turf Course. Following a tough beginning and a traffic-filled ending, her trainer focused on the silver lining and the experience she gained, finishing just 1 3/4 lengths behind the winner. Broken Proposal came out of the race in good order and has been training forwardly ahead of her spot in the Princess Elizabeth starting gate. Should she win, Broken Proposal would be the seventh Samson Silk Bearer to have won the race that was inaugurated in 1946. Dual Hall of Fame trainer Mark Cassie is always a tough out in any stakes race and will have four chances to win the Princess Elizabeth later today. The co-featured Grade 3 Hendry has drawn six hopefuls, including Amalfi Coast. The five-year-old daughter of Tapazar arrives off a splendid score in the Grade 3 Ontario Fashion Stakes on October 3rd for trainer Kevin Attard. The Hendry goes as race three on the Saturday program, with the Princess Elizabeth slated as race seven. First post is 12:55 Eastern. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTV.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Arrowgate's going to take the far outside route. He's coming up on the outside of Gunavera, but he's a long way behind Gunrunner and Collected as they make their way to the top of the stretch in the Breeders' Cup Classic. They're into the stretch, and it's Collected and Gunrunner. They've been battling since the gates opened. Gunrunner's got the lead. Collected West Coast is bearing down on them on the outside. Final 16th. Gunrunner reaching for the wire. Collected's alongside. And then comes West Coast and War Story. But Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic over Collected. Then came West Coast, followed by War Story. Arrowgate was coming late, but too late. The final time was 2:01.29.
Larry Colmus with the call of the 2017 Breeders' Cup Classic at Del Mar, won by Gunrunner, trained by Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. That is the second classic win for Steve. He's hoping to add a third to his resume later in the season. November 5th and 6th, when the Breeders' Cup returns to Del Mar, we'll be there as your exclusive radio home here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. The only place you'll hear the Breeders' Cup on radio is with us and our Eclipse Award-winning team, and we are happy to bring it your way for the 15th consecutive year. A reminder that you can also tune in to all of our Breeders' Cup countdown shows during the week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning of Breeders' Cup week. They will air from 8 to 10 Pacific time. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. And each of those shows presented by our friends at Hillendale. Bobby Newman, Jude Feld will interview owners and trainers and breeders and give you live reports on what's happening on the racetrack every single morning from Del Mar. That is 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, Wednesday,
and Thursday morning of Breeders' Cup week. Then we segue into all of our Breeders' Cup coverage Friday and Saturday. All of that exclusive coverage here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You will hear every single Breeders' Cup race culminating with that Breeders' Cup Classic, and really excited to bring that your way. Well, again, efforting trainer Steve Asmussen here. He is on the West Coast. He is at Santa Anita, and we are looking forward to catching up with him. By my count, and I will confirm this with Steve when we do get a hold of him, he has 7 horses pointing for the Breeders' Cup right now. Echo Zulu in the Juvenile Fillies, Gunite in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, Silver State looking at the Dirt Mile, Snapper Sinclair, who is looking at either the Dirt Mile or the Turf Mile, Jackie's Warrior in the Sprint, Clairiere in the Distaff, Max Player in the Classic. Those are the horses that, as I was going through doing my homework, researching Steve Asmussen, those are the horses that I came up with. And I believe there are 7. And again, we'll find out from Steve when he joins us here momentarily. We are efforting him now. Boy, would be fantastic if Steve can pull off a third. And you have, do you get the feeling, like I do, that Max Player, despite all of his success, he comes out of that big win by 4 in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. But do you get the feeling that despite all of his success in his last 2 starts, he's really going to be flying under the radar? When you have horses like Nixco, you have horses like Essential Quality and the Derby winner Medina Spirit, who has been in great form in his last couple of starts too, really all year long, you get the feeling that Max Player could end up being the value play in this year's Classic field. I wonder if Steve Asmussen feels the same way. Hoping to have the chance to ask him here in just a few minutes. We are, again, trying to get Steve on the line for you. But you look at that field that's shaping up for the Breeders' Cup Classic. So you got Grade 1 winner, Max Player. Let's say he's under the radar. You got Medina Spirit, who, look, the poor horse is never going to get the respect he deserves based on what transpired after the Kentucky Derby. Doesn't matter if he goes on. Now, let me ask you this question, folks. What happens if Medina Spirit wins the Breeders' Cup Classic? Defeats Essential Quality, Nixco, everybody else, right? Beats the older horses. It would be his 2nd victory against the older horses this year after winning the Grade 1 Awesome Again last time out at Santa Anita. That would make his record in 2021 5 wins, 3 seconds, and a third from 9 starts. Never off the board this year, including a win in the Kentucky Derby and that Grade 1 win in the Awesome Again. Essential Quality, of course, was beaten by Medina Spirit in the Derby, then won the Belmont, then took the Travers, both against straight 3-year-olds. Let's say he gets beat by Medina Spirit in the Classic. Who's your 3-year-old champion? I think Medina Spirit will have a pretty strong case there. Don't know if he'll get the votes. Don't know if he'll get the votes because of what transpired with his trainer, Bob Baffert, which, in my opinion, would be a shame. I think if Medina Spirit goes out, wins the Breeders' Cup Classic, defeating Essential Quality, I think he is your 3-year-old champion. Dr. Mary Scalay, one of the leading equine veterinarians, joined me on this very same program, Preakness Morning, to talk about Medina Spirit and what transpired in the Kentucky Derby 2 weeks before. One of the questions that I asked her was, did the presence, the overage of betamethasone in Medina Spirit's system allow Medina Spirit to win the Kentucky Derby? Did it make him run faster? Unequivocally, she said, no, I do not believe it did. That is not that type of drug. So we know Medina Spirit was clean in the Preakness. All the extensive testing that they did. I'm sure he was clean in the Shared Belief. I'm sure he was clean in the Awesome Again. So let's give the horse some credit here. Let's not penalize the horse for something that the trainer has done. And if it wasn't Bob Baffert, that his team has done. But where there's smoke, there's fire. Something happened. Obviously, the overage, that's not debatable. He had this in his system on Derby Day. You cannot have that in your system according to the rules of racing here in Kentucky. But don't penalize the horse for that infraction. If, and I do get a vote at the end of the year for the three-year-old title for Horse of the Year, I do get a vote. And I'm going to tell you right now, if Medina Spirit wins the Classic, look, Bob Baffert is going to have to undergo extensive testing for all of his horses at his own expense. That's what came out this week from Breeders' Cup. So every Gamin, Medina Spirit, all of the horses he's going to run are going to be tested and tested and tested again. They're going to have extra security. They're going to be under extra scrutiny. So if Medina Spirit proves, again, head-to-head, that he is better than Essential Quality, that he is better than Hot Rod Charlie, if he defeats Nick's Go, if he knocks off Max Player, he's your three-year-old champion. You might not agree with that because of what happened in the Kentucky Derby, but according to Dr. Scalay, betamethasone did not make him run faster. He won that race on his own accord. Will the voters look past that? I know I will. It's really interesting. Maybe I'll try to squeeze that in. Coming up with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin, I ask, they answer. Maybe we'll save it for next week. We've got a full litany of topics to go through with them when they join me at 10:30. Including the Bob Baffert situation. Because of the fact that Bob has now agreed to cover the additional testing for his horses at Breeders' Cup out of his own pocket, he's responsible for that. Does that set a bad precedent for other trainers moving forward? Do we now see racetracks and jurisdictions say, okay, you can run your horses, but we're not paying for the testing, but you have to go undergo extensive testing to make sure you're clean if you've had an infraction? Doug O'Neill has had infractions. I mean, let's face it. Let's take a look at the trainers that are involved in the Breeders' Cup this year and go through and tell me which trainer has not been tripped up from time to time. So Bob Baffert agreeing to those terms, does that set a bad precedent? I think it could. I certainly think it could. Again, I'll ask Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin that question coming up in I Ask, They Answer, 10:30 Eastern. Steve Asmussen, again, was set to join us in this segment. Unfortunately, I'm sure he's tied up. He is at Santa Anita. He was going to do the interview while he was trying to work his horses. But let's face it, we're 13 days out from the Breeders' Cup, folks. This is a very busy time for these trainers, especially a guy like Steve Asmussen. We'll try to catch up with him next week and over the next couple of weeks as we edge closer to the Breeders' Cup to fill you in on his horses. But again, seven horses pointing for the Breeders' Cup races under the care of Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. And we'll do that. Obviously, he was tied up this morning, not able to join us. We apologize for that. But again, busy time for these trainers here as we lead up to Breeders' Cup. I'll get to another break. I will come back and get you set for the third hour of the show. Take a look at some historical dates in racing history that happened around this time, too. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
70 organizations, 160 facilities, 7,800 horses. One accreditation. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in thoroughbred aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the thoroughbred industry. To learn more or to support the TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick and proud aunt. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing. But not every child gets to be carefree. One in six kids in the U.S. are hungry. One in six. That little girl sitting alone at the playground, she can't play like the other kids. She doesn't have the energy because she's hungry. School lunch will be her only meal today. It breaks my heart that this is the reality in our country, but it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste. This food is then provided to families and children in need. Being a kid should be about using your imagination, learning, and having fun. These children shouldn't have to miss out on simply being a kid because they're hungry. To find out how you can help end childhood hunger in your community, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
We have the world at our fingertips, inspiration in our touch, and power in our hands. Our hands, gentle enough to hold the next generation, yet strong enough to build movements that can change the world. Our hands can build relationships, frame ideas, and empower communities. We have the ability to share and imagine, create and comfort, love and heal the world around us. And it doesn't stop there. Right here, in our hands, we have the power to save a life. If you see a teen or adult suddenly collapse, call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest.
The power is in your hands.
Anthem Foundation is the proud national supporter of the American Heart Association's Hands Only CPR campaign.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, that interview with Steve Asmussen that you didn't hear in the previous segment, Steve obviously tied up this morning. He did try calling back in. We will find time for Steve, certainly, over the next week or two. I'll try to bring an interview your way next Saturday on this same program with Steve. We'll look at all of his Breeders' Cup contenders as they edge closer to racing's championship days. But that interview scheduled to be brought to you by our friends at Jellyfish Water. You heard in the first hour of the program my interview with Mike Bagley, who is the president and CEO of Jellyfish. Well, you know, whatever your day brings at the track or in life, you can reach for a bottle of Jellyfish Water to refresh, reset, and rejoice. Jellyfish Water is not a flavored water or a fitness water. It is a philosophy water. Mike explained that in the first hour of the program. It's about being persistent in your efforts and getting to the winner's circle in life. You can find your case of inspiration right now at jellyfishwater.com. Well, this is the segment where I do like to get you ready for the third hour of the program, but I also like to take a look at some historical dates in racing history, and not a whole lot available for October 23rd, but yesterday, October 22nd, 1964 was the anniversary of jockey Bill Shoemaker winning his 5,000th career victory, and it was aboard Slapstick at Aqueduct. How about that? October 22nd, 1973 was the day that Secretariat was flown to Woodbine, where he would compete in his final career race, the Canadian International Championship Stakes. And tomorrow, October 24th, 1953, that's the anniversary of Tom Fool, who won the Pimlico Special by 8 lengths. He capped off a perfect 4-year-old campaign with 10 stakes wins in as many starts The special was his fourth consecutive race run as a non-betting exhibition. Tom Fool was voted Horse of the Year in 1953, edging out Native Dancer, who lost only one of his 10 stakes races that year. That was, of course, the Kentucky Derby. And those are some notable dates in racing history as it pertains to this weekend and yesterday, of course. Coming up in hour number three, it kicks off with In the Room with Sean Clancy. I told you earlier in the program that you won't want to miss it. Sean sits down for his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with Mr. 7000, Mario Pino. And it is going to be fantastic. Trust me on this one. Kurt Becker takes you on a stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland at 10:25. And at 10:30, I welcome trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin to the show for this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, your phone, or tablet with our live streaming always available at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum comes up next. That's right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Homeward bound circular key coming out gamely on the center of the track, but it's not going to get to Street Sense. He's gone well to you as they come for home now. And it's going to be Street Sense to win this one at distance. Street Sense could not have been more impressive. He runs.
Golden Years digging down for the test of Legal Punch. Golden Years finally getting away in that final furlong. They tried to test Golden Years, but they just can't touch Golden Years in the Maryland Million Nursery.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Into the stretch at Laurel Park. 8 to Fast to Catch and Forest Boyce going to work in that final furlong with a 4-length lead. Concealed Identity is charging hard into second, but with a 16th of a mile left to go. At the age of 8, he's still too fast to catch. 8 to Fast to Catch, his third Maryland Million Classic score.
Enjoy the music inching away. Strike up the band. Number 7,000 for the Magic Man. A milestone. It happens right here at Presco Downs tonight. Congratulations to Mario Pino, the Magic Man, joining an exclusive group of 10 riders in the nation with 7,000 wins.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Yeah, pretty special. You're going to hear from Mario Pino coming up shortly. Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, rolling on. Hour number three. If you missed any portion of the first 2 hours of the program, or any of our shows for that matter, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can check out the podcast at your leisure, including podcasts of all of our In the Room segments with Sean Clancy. Those are available in a special page there for you. You can just go listen to those. You can listen to Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History segments, which have been just outstanding each and every week. And, of course, all of our I Ask, They Answer segments with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin are posted for you on our website as well. That is going to be a good one coming up at 10:30 Eastern this morning. Poll question, it involves Mario Pino. In honor of Mario winning his 7,000th race, becoming just the 10th jockey in the history of the sport to do so, who is your all-time favorite jockey? You can let me know at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know. Who is your all-time favorite jockey? Mario Pino might get some votes, especially after what he accomplished before he retired. Sean Clancy went in the room with Mario. He had a chance to talk to him on Thursday morning. That was the morning after he recorded that milestone win number 7,000. He retired after racing on Thursday evening. So when you hear Mario talk about riding that night, riding Thursday night, it's because of the fact that Sean sat down with him on Thursday morning right before he retired, right after he got win number 7,000. So here it is, in the room, Sean Clancy with Mario Pino.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
This is Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Mario Pino. In the room again. Mario, we spoke in February when you were 39 wins away from 7,000. You did it. You did it, buddy.
Yep. It wasn't as hard as I actually thought. I was really like 39, and, you know, like I didn't know really what to expect. And like the last, like the meet's over tonight, so I wanted to do it here. And I needed five wins, and I was only there was only four racing days left. And I was like, wow. And, you know, in horse racing, you can never predict if you're going to win. I mean, I had some decent shots, but you could run a lot of seconds. And, you know, when them last two come around, they're the hardest. So I was really, really lucky and blessed the way it worked out.
No, it was brilliant. You got a dead heat, I think, one night, and won another one by a nose. I mean, it was coming down close. Watching you ride over the years, even coming down to the 7,000, with all that on the line, you still never overrode the horses. And I just thought that was such a credit to your style. Is that something you fight, or is just that natural that you? I asked Pat Day the same question. You never overrode the horses.
Yeah, because. Yeah, that was kind of been my style of my career, you know. It's just like when you're overriding them, you're kind of like almost throwing them off stride. You know, I mean, you're getting down to riding, you're strong, pushing along, but you don't want to do overriding because it's just knocking them off little rhythm here and there, you know. And sometimes that when it's getting down to the wire there, that little movement can cost you win. Sometimes, so you just got to keep that rhythm going, and the horse will kind of get competitive too. Yeah, that's been my style all my life. I've never kind of overridden the horse, and I mean, sometimes I had to get down and ride harder than others, and then there's times where I don't ride as hard because the horse is just not is giving me all he can, and it's almost like you're nursing him to the wire. It's the feeling you feel that last 70 yards, what you got to do to get to the wire first. You're at the wire first, and, you know, sometimes you win and sometimes you lose.
Sure, exactly. You've done it better than most. What was the feeling like when you won the 7,000s? I know it was the favorite, enjoyed the music. You got in front. You kind of opened up a big lead. Did you actually get time to enjoy it down the stretch, or what was that like? Take us through that moment.
Yeah, Sean, like, it was really, I'll give you the whole description of the race. I kind of, like, looked like, and he looked like the best horse in the race. And it was for a friend of mine that I've been riding for the last 10 years for over here. And I just didn't want nothing to go wrong because I knew when I won the second race by a nose and it was on his horse, and I would love to have done it on his horse. And the race set up really perfect for me. And I kind of, like, when I was coming to the front end horse, I kind of peeked under my arm one stride because I said, you know, I didn't want to move too soon.
Right, and, sure.
But I wanted to get by the lead horse because the lead horse had a little horse too. So I wanted to kind of get up on top of him a little bit. And once I put him away, once I knew I had him, I kind of peeked back and make sure nobody was making a run on me too. But when it turned for home, I just said, well, now let's just go. You know what I mean? And he responded, but the last 20 yards he started waiting. And I was getting a little panicking that last 20 yards. But we lasted, and it was a great feeling when I hit that finish line. It was like a big relief.
For sure, no doubt. And I think Pablo Morales might have, he kind of galloped up your inside and fist bumped,
yeah.
I think. Yeah,
yes, he did. You know, guy flew by me at the wire. He goes, congratulations. And then Pablo pumped fist me galloping out. And good little jockey and a nice boy.
Right, for sure. Yeah, what's that relationship like up there? I mean, you've been doing it a long time with those guys when you're 60 years old, and you could see the respect and admiration they have for you by the celebration in the winner's circle. I guess that must be a great feeling for you.
Yeah, it really is, Sean. There's some good guys here. And like you said, I've been here for the last 10, 11 years and riding with them. And good bunch of riders. I mean, you know, we have a good camaraderie here. And most of them are, well, all of them are younger than me. But and I'm in the same corner with Pablo and another young guy, another Alando. He won two. Well, I'm with these two. Pablo's one of them. I'm in the same corner. So we all get along good, and you know, they. I respect them because what they're doing. They're good little riders, and I think they respect me too.
And I had to laugh when they interviewed you after the race. They asked if you're going to ride the next race, and you said yes. And then you kind of made a comment like, I don't know about tomorrow, which would be Thursday night. And I said to myself, now, wait a minute. Mario Pino, the working man's jock, he's not going to take off the last night. I mean, he's got commitments, right? So you decided to ride Thursday night.
Yes, exactly. So I was thinking about it because it's going to be a rough night tonight here. It's going to be windy, rainy, and cold. And I'm on like 7 or 8 of them. And I'm like, man, do I want to go through this? But I'm going to go because I don't want to. I've been ridden for some of these people through the meet, and then they've been good to me, so I don't want to just jump off, you know. So I'm going to finish tonight, and it'll be my last race I ever ride in my life. So I'm thinking about that, this last ride, you know. And but I have no regrets. I have no regrets, you know, in my career. I really, you know, people ask me, well, do you have any regrets or do you want to miss it? I said, yeah, I'm going to miss it, but I'm proud of what I've done, you know, like winning the George Wolf and the Mike Venezia and winning 7,000 races and being in the Maryland Hall of Fame and just putting all this time in and the hard work I did to get there. And I've been ridden full time for the last 7 years, so. Yeah, so I'm real proud of what I've done, and I'm not going to look back.
No doubt. Hey, well, every jockey has a different style and a different way of handling their career. For you to set that goal to get to 7,000, I mean, I know that was a very concerted effort, I guess. And in a way, maybe that helps with the closure of it all that you accomplished that goal.
Yeah, because, you know, I didn't know I could do it. You know what I mean? You know, like I said, you never.
Of course.
You can't say I'm going to do anything in horse racing. So I came up here, and I did fairly well. And I got lucky in a lot of spots. And I think I rode really well, too, to be honest with you. You know, like I said, I never brag about myself, but I think I rode well here, this meet. You know, sometimes you go to a time where you don't think you are, but I think I really – like, I run into people now, they say, why are you quitting? You can ride another year and a half. You're riding, you look better now on a horse than you did when you were riding in Maryland. And I was like, well, yeah, thanks. But like I said, you know, I made this to win 7,000, and I'm going to walk away tonight, and that'll be it. And I'll miss it because I love it. I love the horses. I love the competing, but it's pretty time for me now. So, like I said, I'm not going to regret on anything.
Yeah, well, what will you miss the most?
You know what I miss the most, Sean? The horses.
Yeah.
I love getting on the horses and feeling, you know, them responding to me. And, you know, I just love and the competing. I'm going to miss that. And I'm going to miss the everyday going to the jocks room like I did almost all my life. And the people there the friends I've met and been around, like everybody in the horse racing that I've, Delaware, Maryland, just everybody, all the trainers and you, and, you know, I'm just going to miss all that. And that'll be what I'll miss the most.
If somebody, when you walked in the jocks room as a 10-pound bug in 1977, right out of, you know, a little public school there in Delaware, and somebody said, you'd win 7,000 races, what would you say to them?
Never thought that. I thought I was only going to ride about 3 or 4 years and quit. I really did. I said, I'm going to ride 3 or 4 years, and my weight will get to me or something. And now that I'm in 40-some years, and I'm not really light. You know what I mean? I had to work at it. It wasn't, I'm like, I've been kind of watching my weight for all my career. I wasn't really that heavy, but I wasn't light either. So I had to keep watching. But now that it's come to an end, I can eat what I want, and I don't have to wake up and think about anything or worry about any. You know, I'm fine now. I'm happy.
Yeah, what are you going to do next? I mean, do you have plans to, second career at 60, or do you just, and obviously take a little time to kind of take it easy, but.
True, yeah. I have no, me and my wife, I live in Florida, so I have a lot of things to do, and we're going to travel a little bit, and I'm just happy that I don't have to go and just get another job.
Yeah, exactly. Who wants a job?
So it's not like a lot of pressure to go find another job. So I'm blessed there.
Wow. So why? How did you make it? I mean, why did you make it? I've asked you that question before, but I mean, it's just sheer dedication. I mean, obviously talent and work ethic. But I mean, what's the combination to win 7,000 and do it like you've done it?
You know, I think it's more of like a passion for it. You know. And I mean, you named all the right things right there: work ethic, good attitude, just showing up. You know, even when sometimes I was tired or sick, I still went and rode. And that's not easy sometimes. You know, you see people, you know, if they're sick or something like that, they just take off or they're tired. So I just kept going. And, the work ethics, like you said, I worked hard, and it was a job for me from day one that I loved, and I was blessed to be a jockey because it was a perfect job for me, you know, through everything.
Yeah, and I guess along the way you've seen jockeys kind of come and go, right? I mean, as a veteran jockey, it's kind of painy to watch kids just squander opportunities or not make the most of them.
True. I've seen many come and go, and many very talented riders, and just didn't have the right attitude or work ethic. And in the last few years, if I run into a young jockey now that's just starting out, an apprentice or a young rider, I always tell them that. I always say, you got to work hard and keep going forward, because if you keep yourself going forward, good things happen. You got to just keep going. Even when you think, they get discouraged, I just always say, have a good attitude and work hard and try to improve yourself every day. And, that's the only advice I can tell them, unless they ask for something else. But that's what I would tell young riders all the time.
For you, was there ever a time that you were thinking about quitting or stopping? I mean, was there any real downtime?
Many times, yeah. Actually, I wasn't
silly question. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, I wasn't going to try to go this year again. I was just going to quit 39 away, and then not quit, but like retiring. So this year, I you probably read it or heard it from someone. I was talking to Wesley Ward because that's where I used to come out under. You know, go there and work, and he helped me get ready for here. Put me on some horses and stuff, and we were talking in the pack room. I was just, you know, talking, and he said to me, Mario, you're 39 wins away. You should try to do it. Don't leave it on the table. You got 39 and you can do it. He said, you ride good, you're healthy, you're fit, you're good with the horses. Just push yourself to do it. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect, so it worked out. You know, I did it. I came back up here because I wasn't going to come back to Presque Isle. But I wasn't that far off, so it worked out for me. And I thanked him. He texted me today. I said, thanks for pushing me to give me that little extra push. it all worked out good, Sean. So that's what happened.
39 the hard way, I guess, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mario, I know for myself, I couldn't be more proud of a jockey, of a friend to work at it and stick with it. You're a credit to the game, and we'll miss seeing you ride, but we're also the memories and the achievements that you've delivered over the years have been just second to none. We're proud to call you a friend.
Yeah, I hope I kind of made a good example for jockeys that they're coming up and learn, like, you know, learn the little things to keep you to make you last long in this game. You know what I mean? So if I did that, I'm proud of that, and I'm gonna feel bad after this last one. But that's life. Gotta step down sometimes. So it's all good.
That's Mario Pino, our friend, and again, we're proud of you, and congratulations on the 7,000, and enjoy your last day as a jockey.
Thanks, Sean. You're my friend, too. Thanks, you, buddy.
What a visit. What a conversation. Sean Clancy, Mario Pino, congrats to Mario on everything he's accomplished, and we wish him all the best in his retirement. I'm back after a word from the sponsors, including Fanticipate and My Racehorse.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online, enjoy insider access to your stable, and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today. My Racehorse offers securities only for the use of an offering circulation as part of an offering statement. Qualified by the securities and exchange under Tier 2 of Regulation A.
When I come back, it's time to take you on a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker. And don't forget, coming up, I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. Don't forget, on March 13th, we have the Grade 3 Maple Leaf Stakes for fillies and mares, and on the 14th, the Grade 2 Autumn Stakes for 3-year-olds and up. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
The Adina Springs Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in 5 countries, and the number one sire of grade one performers in his crop. Multiple grade one winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose 2-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the Woodward.
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poet's won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
Join the Maryland Jockey Club for the 36th running of Jim McKay Maryland Million Day. Saturday, October 23rd at Laurel Park. Come with friends and family to Maryland's Day at the Races. Enjoy a full day of racing with on-track entertainment between races. It will be fun for all at Laurel Park. Saturday, October 23rd. First post, 11:30 a.m. The 36th running of Jim McKay Maryland Million Day.
After an unprecedented year apart, the time
has finally come to say, welcome back, fans, to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Welcome back to the prestige and excitement to witnessing history firsthand. As the world's most majestic athletes look to be crowned champion in 14 thrilling Breeders' Cup races, and over $31 million in purses and awards waits across the finish line. On November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup will welcome it all back. The world's best thoroughbreds, the brightest stars, and the most passionate fans. An experience that's a breed apart. Tickets on sale now at BreedersCup.com/tickets.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. The Breeders' Cup World Championships at Del Mar are just a couple of weeks away, and once again, they figure to play a prominent role in determining season-ending champions. That has been the case since 1984. The Eclipse Awards themselves date to 1971, and Horse of the Year polls by major newspapers date to 1936. But today, we look all the way back to 1921, to an era when there was no official balloting and when Horse of the Year was nothing more than a topic for debate among racing fans and newspaper columnists around the country. And according to sports reporters who covered racing that season, the best horse in the U.S. in 1921 was a horse named Gray Lag. Gray Lag was foaled in 1918 in Lexington, Kentucky at Hamburg Place, the farm of John Madden, who was America's top-ranked breeder of thoroughbreds at the time. Despite his name, the colt was not gray. He was chestnut, a redhead, but he had patches of gray hair in his coat that caused many in the press to call him the Painted Horse. Still, his name had nothing to do with his coloring. He was instead named for a European goose, which was said to have had a shrill cry which aided the army of ancient Rome when enemies would approach. Gray Lag was described as having two white legs and a blazed face. He was a short-necked, thick-bodied horse who looked nothing like a distance runner. His temperament was calm, his running style businesslike and methodical. It was said that he liked to follow the pace instead of making it. His vulnerability was that he suffered from soft feet, and issues regarding soreness would plague him throughout his career. Trainer Max Hirsch, a future Hall of Famer, purchased Gray Lag privately in the spring of 1920 for $20,000. He debuted the colt at Belmont Park late in the year, winning the Islip Handicap on September 8th before running third in Belmont's prestigious Futurity. Trainer Sam Hildreth, representing the Rancocas stable of oilman Harry Sinclair, showed interest in buying the colt from Hirsch but balked at the price of $40,000. When Gray Lag won the Champagne Stakes at Belmont on September 14th, Hildreth changed his mind. Hirsch, still angry at having been snubbed, told Hildreth the price was now $60,000, and Hildreth agreed to pay it. Gray Lag lost three of his next four starts after changing hands, and he finished his two-year-old campaign with a runner-up effort in the inaugural running of the Kentucky Jockey Club Stakes at Churchill Downs. Thus far, he had won a grand total of $9,000 for his new owner, leaving the Rancocas stable $51,000 in the hole. W.C. Vreeland, a racing columnist with a newspaper in Brooklyn, New York, took owner Harry Sinclair and trainer Sam Hildreth to task, and he was merciless. Vreeland declared that Gray Lag wilted under pressure, lacked the courage to fight, and could not handle a wet track. Not even a victory in the prestigious Remsen Stakes at Aqueduct had impressed him. He at least conceded that Gray Lag was not a laggard, but emphatically stated that neither was he a first-class horse. According to the columnist, the only thing Gray Lag proved was that Max Hirsch was a good salesman. The start to Gray Lag's three-year-old season only seemed to prove his critics correct. He was scratched on the eve of the Kentucky Derby with a stone bruise to his hoof. 1 month later, he was third as the favorite in the Withers Stakes at Belmont Park. One of his critics remarked, "He quit like a yellow hound." But as Gray Lag got the chance to stretch to longer distances, he began to flourish. On June 11, 1921, he won the Belmont Stakes at a mile and 3/8 by 5 lengths in track record time. 6 days later, he beat older horses to win the Brooklyn Handicap, becoming only the sixth three-year-old in 35 years to do so. He won the Dwyer Stakes at Aqueduct on July 7th in a gallop, tying the world record for a mile and an eighth in 1 minute 49 seconds. On July 16th, he took the Empire City Derby at Yonkers, toting 129 pounds over a distance of a mile and a quarter. And on July 30th, he traveled to Devonshire Park in Windsor, Ontario, and won the International Stakes in 1 minute 50 seconds flat, breaking the Canadian record at 9 furlongs. That string of summer successes would be enough to cause most members of the media to declare Grey Lag the top racehorse in the United States for 1921. Even Mr. Vreeland grudgingly agreed. Grey Lag would finish his career a few years later with a record of 25 wins and 47 starts for earnings of $136,000. His achievements as an older horse included the Empire City Handicap, carrying 132 pounds, the Saratoga Handicap at 130, and the Suburban Handicap at Belmont Park while carrying 134 pounds. Grey Lag's jockey, Laverne Fader, once said, quote, "Grey Lag was game and stout-hearted. He always gave his best. He understood what was wanted of him and then helped his rider accomplish his aim to the best of his ability. He was a real thoroughbred," end quote. Today, Grey Lag is remembered with a thoroughfare named in his honor in Lexington, Kentucky. And we remember him, too, as the horse who defied his critics and who was declared by many in the press to be the horse of the year 100 years ago. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Another fantastic story. My thanks to Kurt, to Lane's End, and to Keeneland for making those possible. If you missed any of his Stroll Through Racing History segments, all you have to do is go back to our website and check them out at your leisure. There is a special section dedicated to Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. When I come back, Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin, this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. It's going to be a good one. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The moment we've all been waiting for is here. Racing returns to Keeneland for the fall meet, October 8th through the 30th. And tickets are now available online for pre-purchase. Place your bets during the fall meet anywhere, anytime from your phone with Keeneland Select. New accounts receive $100 back when you wager $200 on the fall meet, plus the standard $100 sign-up bonus. And Keeneland Select members receive free admission to Keeneland. Sign up to wager at KeenelandSelect.com.
This proven son of Giants Causeway has sired six millionaires, including Claiborne Farm stallion Lee. Recent top runners include graded stakes winner Plum Ali.
But it's going to be Plum Ali, and she's now 3-for-3.
Sharp Samurai, international star Shivaji, and Birdie Queen, plus these standout performers. In the ring, his yearlings sold up to $260,000. First Samurai, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Join the Maryland Jockey Club for the 36th running of Jim McKay Maryland Million Day. Saturday, October 23rd at Laurel Park. Come with friends and family to Maryland's Day at the Races. Enjoy a full day of racing with on-track entertainment between races. It will be fun for all at Laurel Park. Saturday, October 23rd. First post, 11:30 a.m. The 36th running of Jim McKay Maryland Million Day.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
It is Ganin with the lead as they come for the top of the stretch. Room on the inside for Lake Avenue. Then Estilo Talentoso. CC on the far outside as they move down for the eighth pole. It is Gamine with the lead. CC on the outside. Lake Avenue down at the rail. Then it is Sconson. Now there's a 16th to the finish. And Gamine has a three-length lead. Lake Avenue giving chase. It will be Gamine and Johnny Velasquez to win the Grade 1, Kettle 1, Ballerina. 7 furlongs in 1:21.3.
John Embriel with the call. That is Gamine winning the Ballerina at Saratoga in her most recent effort. That catapults the Eclipse champion female sprinter into this year's edition of the Breeders' Cup. She will look to defend her title in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. And with that, I say welcome to this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf rider Tim Wilkin. A few weeks ago, you'll recall that we talked about the fact that Breeders' Cup was going to be making a decision on whether or not Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert was going to be allowed to participate in this year's event. And I posed the question to Dale and Tim, asking them to complete this sentence. Bob Baffert not being allowed to participate in the Breeders' Cup would be. And Dale's response was criminal. Tim also agreed that Dale should be allowed to participate. Well, this past week, the Breeders' Cup announced that that is the case. Bob's horses will be allowed to run, but they are going to have to undergo additional testing that is going to be at the expense of trainer Bob Baffert. So my first question on this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer comes in two parts. And Dale, I guess I'll kick it off with you first. Do you agree with how Breeders' Cup has decided to handle this situation? And is Bob Baffert making a mistake by agreeing to those terms?
Not really, but we're beating a dead horse here. It's the same issue. He's innocent until proven guilty. He hasn't even had a hearing. Here's what I don't like about this. It's all placating to the public. It's to me, it's phony. There's such stringent security and testing already in place. And if there's something better they can do, then we should all be under those same rules. It should be as tight as security as possible. When you come out and say, well, we're going to give him more security, well, that means other people are getting less security. And believe me, it's not like that at Breeders' Cup. They do out of competition testing. We have security on our horses constantly, not only to protect the horses, but to make sure that the horses are not tampered with for illegal reasons. And, you know, it just let the guy run. And then we'll figure it out after. He's got a lot of punishment coming if in fact, he has his day in court and he's found guilty. It'll all take care of itself. And as far as him doing the right thing, he did what he had to do. You can't, I mean, at some point, you got to start picking your fights. And, you know, that's not a fight. If I'm him, I would have picked right now to go on and do what I'm doing. I got a bigger fish to fry, you know, just fighting for his career.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question, Dale. As a trainer, I said this earlier in the show. Do you think that Bob agreeing to fund additional testing out of his own pocket now sets a bad precedent going forward for other trainers where other racetracks and jurisdictions might say, okay, you know what? You can run your horses in this race, but you have to do additional testing. We're not paying for it. You have to pay for it if you want to run.
Well, and see, in that case, I think that the horsemen's groups out there should have stepped up and fought for him to not have to pay for it. They're going to profit off his horses, and they're going to profit big. His horses are going to get the most play on them, yet they want to make him. But there's been so many negative precedents set since Derby Day, in my opinion, since this the whole thing started. The fact you can just kick a guy out of a legendary racetrack without his day in court, it's a bad precedent. There's so many different things that have gone on around this situation that I think are just wrong.
Tim Wilkin,
and I want to make clear, I'm not defending Bob's bad tests. I'm defending them not giving him his due process, his day in court.
Yep. Yeah, right. Tim Wilkin, do you agree with how Breeders' Cup has decided to handle the situation? And do you think Bob is making a mistake agreeing to those terms?
Well, it seems to me that the whole Bob Baffert situation has been it's been a trial by social media. And I think that people are just trying to crucify this guy who don't have all the facts. And, you know, I hope that the Breeders' Cup didn't take that into consideration. The Breeders' Cup needs to have Bob Baffert in their signature event because, you know, he is the Tom Brady of the sport. He's the guy that everyone knows, you know, love him or hate him. He's the guy that has to be at the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, if you're going to have all of this scrutiny on the horses coming out to the Breeders' Cup, all right, then do it for everybody. But, you know, don't make the guy pay for it out of his own pocket. That's ridiculous. Like Dale said, I mean, they're making money off of his horses.
Yeah.
And it's just wrong to me. I mean, he'll get his day in court and, you know, then let the chips fall where they may. But right now, let the man, you know, earn his livelihood and bring these horses that, you know, more than a few of them have a pretty good chance to do well.
You know, I'm going to bring this other angle up to you guys, and I didn't tell you we were going to talk about this. This is totally out of the blue, but I said this earlier in the program that if Medina Spirit were to win the Breeders' Cup Classic and defeat Essential Quality again head-to-head, and if he knocks off Nick's Go and Max Player and all the other top older horses, he'd have two victories against older horses because he won the Awesome Again in his previous start. Do you guys think that voters, when it comes to the three-year-old championship, would be able to look at Medina Spirit the same way and just focus on the horse and his accomplishments, or does he get penalized because of Bob Baffert and have no chance of being three-year-old champion?
Well, if all of that did come to fruition, and I do have a vote. I mean, I vote for the Eclipse.
Yeah, me too.
If Medina Spirit were to win the Breeders' Cup Classic, I think it's a slam dunk that he's the horse of the year. I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, the horse has done nothing wrong. He just runs, you know, and, you know, that all that other stuff, that was he helped in the Derby? I'm not totally convinced that he was. So I think that if Medina Spirit somehow wins the Breeders' Cup Classic, he's without a doubt should be an easy horse of the year champion, in my opinion.
22 picograms did not help this horse win the Kentucky Derby. The horse is hit on all cylinders. If he wins the Classic, I agree, he should be champion. But there's human nature involved, and that's the problem with all these things, all these awards, and whether it's Academy Award, or Grammy, or Eclipse Award, human nature's involved, and there's voting going on, and it's just human nature to be negative on this horse.
Yeah, Dr. Mary Scalay also told me on this same show that beta-methasone overage in his system did not cause him to run faster. It was not the reason he won the Kentucky Derby. Would be interesting, though, if he goes on to be voted three-year-old champion or horse of the year and is eventually disqualified from the Kentucky Derby. That would certainly be something. Okay, topic number two. Transportation has become a major issue surrounding this year's Breeders' Cup. I talked to Neil Pessin about it on the show last week. Not for the people, but for the horses. In May, Tech Sutton said, you know what, we normally handle the shipping process, but we are unable to renew their lease with any of the aircraft carriers. They have now partnered with FedEx to ship the horses throughout the summer. That has created its own set of issues trying to get out to Breeders' Cup via FedEx. Guys, what type of impact is that going to have on this year's Breeders' Cup?
It's major. It's a major impact. I think it keeps horses on the fringe from the East Coast from going out there that might have taken a shot. You might see somebody jump in from the West Coast that's already there. That maybe not. I mean, Neil's not going. I think he's made that official. And I think part of the problem was the shipping. And it's not just the animals. It's the people, too. We're accustomed to sending up to 14 people on the horse plane when we send the horses out. And if it's not my groom, it's a friend of mine's groom that's on there that's looking after our horses. These horses have to go by themselves. And we have to send a team in commercial early to get everything set up. But it's hard to let a horse of the value of these horses out of your hands without your help looking after them for as long as it takes to leave Churchill Downs or Belmont Park and get to San Diego. It's a major inconvenience. I don't know what we're going to do about it. It's a much bigger picture, a higher pay grade than any of us or anybody I know has. But I sure wish that Tech Sutton would figure out a way to get things rolling again.
Tim, do you agree this has a major impact on the Breeders' Cup picture?
Sure it does. I mean, how else are you going to get to California? I mean, you're not going to van 2,800 miles from New York or 2,000 miles from Kentucky. That would be ridiculous. And I believe that the Breeders' Cup has chartered two flights, one from Newark on Halloween and the other one from Indianapolis the next day. And they're paying all the expenses on that. But again, like, I think there's 33 horses that can go on each flight. And again, the grooms are not allowed to go on the flight. I guess there's three Tech Sutton grooms that are on these flights, but Yeah, as Dale said, I mean, if you're sending one of your horses out there, you want to have your people on the flight with these horses. I mean, that just makes common sense. I mean, you know, the fact that Tex Sutton hasn't been able to fly since spring, that he haven't been able to get any flights, it's horrible for the game. And it'll be interesting to see how many horses from the East Coast do end up going. I know Steve Asmussen sent a lot of his horses out right after the Saratoga meet ended, basically, and they've been out. But that wasn't by the fact that the plane deal. I think he just wanted to get his horses out there to train, but he had plenty of time to get out there. And if you're going out on Halloween or the day after, that only gives you a couple of days to get acclimated to a new place for a lot of these horses, most of these horses that have never been there. You know, I just think that, you know, it's great to have the Breeders' Cup in California. No doubt about that with the weather and everything. But man, it's just a major inconvenience and a pain to everyone that's going to be trying to get their horses out there.
Yeah, well,
I need to go back to the old Seabiscuit days and put them on boxcars on the trains and send them out.
You got a boxcar?
Yeah, that's what we need to get. It's another boxcar like they used to ship Seabiscuit around the world.
You got access to one of those?
No, but I wish I did. It'd be like Wild Wild West.
Would you put your horses in a boxcar and send them out there by train?
Well, I used to. It worked for Seabiscuit. Why not?
All right. Topic number three. One horse who is absolutely not making the trip to Del Mar is Maxfield. It was announced this week. Trainer Brendan Walsh said that even though his Grade 1 winner earned a spot in the starting gate of the Breeders' Cup with his win in the Stephen Foster this summer, he's going to forego a shot at the Classic and instead point for the Grade 1 Clark at Churchill on November 26th. Guys, do you like the call? Timmy, I'll go to you first.
No, I don't like the call because I thought Maxfield was going to be a major factor in the Breeders' Cup. I think there's going to be so much pace in there that the race could have really set up nice for him. But, you know, I was going to use him for sure in my exotics. And you know, I think he might even have been able to win the race. But, you know, Brendan Walsh knows what he's doing with the horse. And the fact that he's going to shoot for the Clark, the horse is, I think, 4-for-4 at Churchill Downs, which, you know, he obviously likes Churchill Downs. And, you know, in his last two, he wasn't a factor in the Woodward when he couldn't catch Arch Guard Collector. He wasn't a factor in the Whitney when he couldn't collect, he couldn't catch Knick's Gold. So, you know, I want to see all the good horses, the real good horses, go to the Breeders' Cup. And I do wish Maxfield was going. I do understand in a way why he's not, but I think he would have been a factor in the Classic.
This is one of those issues that the press kind of aggravates me. Because nobody's in that barn every day working with that horse like Brendan is. Yet everybody's going to have a comment and think that their comment's right or their opinion is right. Brendan's not going out there. He's going, not going, because he's doing what he thinks is best for his horse. And so even if he wins, loses, draws, and the Clark, people will be commenting. If he wins big, well, he should have won. He messed up. Brendan's doing the right thing because Brendan's a smart man. He's a sharp horse trainer, and he knows his horse. The rest of us don't. If you're not in the barn every day looking at that horse, then no one has a right to comment on what he did was right or wrong.
All right, well, there it is. That's topic number three. Brendan Walsh, Dale saying, okay, it's the right call on Maxfield. Timmy saying, nah, I want to see all the top horses out in California for the Breeders' Cup Classic. Topic four. There have been some significant news that has come out this week regarding the Stallion Front, and Windstar announced that Distorted Humor and Congrats are both going to be pensioned, meaning they are retired from stud duty. You had top Breeders' Cup Classic contender Knick's Gold, who is going to stand at TaylorMade upon his retirement. Claiborne announced that they have acquired the breeding rights to Met Mile winner Silver State. So, guys, I ask you, which stallions have had the biggest impact on the sport over the past decade? Really curious to get your thoughts on this one. Dale, why don't you take it first?
Well, it's obviously Tappet, and then you got Into Mischief here in the latter part of the last decade. But Tappet was the one. It seems like you go up and down, and somebody takes over. But we still haven't seen anybody like the Impact or Northern Dancer or Stormcat. in the last decade, what they did. And when you really start to see, it takes more than a decade to see the major impact, because there's great sires and then there's great sires of sires. That's what Northern Dancer, Stormcat proved out to be. And that's what some of these horses will be, but they really haven't had a full chance yet. I do think going forward, the major impact horse, and I'm going to, it's not this time. I think he's doing wonderful things. You look at his numbers and you put him with the best horses in the last 10 years, the best sires in their first 2 years, and his numbers are equal or better than almost every one of them.
Timmy?
Well, yeah, obviously you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that Tappet is the main guy. I mean, what he's done in his career, he's 20 years old now, but he's still, you know, producing some phenomenal talents. I mean, look at Essential Quality. I mean, it's he just does is his job. And again, Into Mischief, like Dale said, you know, Mandaloon this year, Authentic last year. He's Sire Life is Good, Gamine, Private Mission, and you know, I've always been a fan of Curlin with some of the horses that he's thrown out there, including Exaggerator and Palace Malice, Malifat this year. But one I would keep an eye on is Gunrunner. He jumped out of the box pretty good this summer, winning two grade ones at Saratoga with Echo Zulu and Goodnight, the Hopeful and the Spinaway. So I think despite the fact that we have horses leaving the stallion ranks, there's an awful lot of good ones still out there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, final question, and this is something that we talked about starting last week. We did it this week. It is a question submitted by our listeners, and HRN Nation wants to know. And this final question submitted by a listener on Twitter. We have seen a trend in recent years of big ownership groups joining forces and partnering to purchase high-end prospects at the sales. Some would say that this makes it more difficult for the quote-unquote little guy to get involved and compete. So, guys, HRN Nation wants to know, is this good or bad for racing? Who wants it first?
I'll take that one. First of all, little guy's not going to buy these top-end horses. I don't care what little guy you are. And, you know, the dynamics of buyers, it always changes every year. You know, what's happening, they're kind of replacing. The shakes have disappeared from the American market. And it's good friendly competition among billionaires. Let them all team up. And Allbaugh family, we've teamed up with a couple of guys and bought some horses. I don't see it being a problem. I think that it may keep them from buying more horses. It might just take the most expensive ones. But the most expensive ones aren't always the best. It may open some doors for other people to jump in there and buy.
Tim?
Well, yeah. Look at Tis the Law last year. I mean, the Sacatoga Group, they're not in the billionaire category by any means. And, you know, lightning struck twice for them when they had Funny Side in 2003, and then they had Tis the Law last year. I mean, it's not like these billionaire, you know, groups that come in and they have the money. Yeah. If you have the money, spend the money. And if you get lucky, you're going to get lucky. I mean, if you have the money, and I'm just going to use myself in this example, because yesterday I had some money and I had to go to this benefit last night, and they had all these door prizes, a 50-50 raffle and all this. So I had enough money to probably put in more money than anybody else, and I won a big door prize and the 50-50, and I walked out of there with all the prizes. So I guess I would be one of the billionaire owners at this benefit last night.
Hey, the great thing about this game is a good horse can come from anywhere. You got $17,000 Seattle Salute that wins a Triple Crown, and if you don't have to be a billionaire to play it, and you could be busted one day and wake up rich the next. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. There's 5,000 horses. I think a few guys teaming up to put their money together. And there's a lot more reasons behind it than just the fact. I mean, any billionaire in the country can afford to buy the whole book first day. But it also is competitions among farms. They all want to have a piece of the best horse when it goes to stallion instead of fighting for it after the fact. That's going to be the biggest effect, is how many of the farms own pieces of horses that have already been made and you're not buying the stallion prospects from off the track.
And if some of these people that have these big operations and they want to allow the common guy to get involved with it. And that's happened too. Let them do it. It'll bring more people into the game, more fans into the game, more interest into the game. And I think it's it'll make the game healthier as we move forward.
Well, it will, and the market always takes care of itself.
Yeah. Interesting takes. Dale Roman's Tim Wilkin. We're back next week with another brand new edition of I Ask, They Answer. We'll tackle more of the hottest topics in the sport. Guys, as always, a lot of fun. Really appreciate you taking the time and appreciate the insight.
Hey, thanks, Mike. We talking about Halloween next week?
Yeah, we're good. Yes, let's figure out your Halloween costume.
Now, I want to tell you one thing about Halloween next week. Running on Halloween Day in the stake at Churchill Downs, my horse, his name is Howling Time out of the Mare Werewolf. It's got to be the greatest hunch bet of the year.
Hey, Dale, congratulations on Dennis's moment. Good to see him back in the winner's circle.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. That was very special for yesterday.
Yeah, fantastic.
All right, folks,
well done.
Next week.
You got it. Dale Roman's Tim Wilkin. I Ask, They Answer. We'll do it again next week, same time, 10:30 Eastern. Make sure you're locked into the Equine Forum. I'm back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Thoroughbred Charities of America raises and distributes funding to approved nonprofits that help thoroughbreds and the people who care for them. TCA's annual grants support aftercare and incentive programs, health and human service initiatives for backstretch and farm workers, and equine-assisted therapy programs that utilize thoroughbreds. TCA is one, helping many. Please support TCA today at tca.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination, but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolatey candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill. But he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those.
He blows right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left. Grabs the water bottle and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, getting ready to wind down this edition of the Equine Forum on this 23rd day of October 2021. One little note to wrap up that edition of I Ask, They Answer. You heard that final question, which was submitted by a listener on our Twitter feed. You can do that now every single week. If you have a topic or you have a question that you want Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin to answer, you can email me, mike@horseracingradio.net. You can do it on our Twitter feed, @HRRN, or Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network, and let us know what question, what topic you want them to debate And if indeed it is something that we like, we'll go ahead and work it into the show every Saturday for you. It's our listener wild card question of the week on I Ask, They Answer. Don't forget that you won't want to miss any coverage from fall racing, including Breeders' Cup, like only Blood Horse Daily can bring you. You can follow the races and news throughout the day on the popular Blood Horse Daily app or have an email sent to you once a day. Both of those are free. Be a part of the widest reaching news platform at bloodhorse.com/daily. That's bloodhorse.com/daily. One more housekeeping note. The Claiming Crown coming up at Gulfstream December 4th. We are closing in on the nomination deadline. That is Monday, November 8th. So keep that in mind for all you horsemen looking to run in the Claiming Crown at Gulfstream on December 4th. The deadline for nominations, Monday, November 8th. Busy program this morning. Of course, all of you who weighed in on the poll question, really appreciate that. Who is your all-time favorite jockey? You can keep those coming at HRRN on our Twitter feed, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Counting down to the Breeders' Cup, you can see a complete Breeders' Cup week broadcast schedule on our website. All of our Breeders' Cup countdown shows throughout the week presented by Hillandale. And, of course, all of our race coverage Friday and Saturday exclusively right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, that full schedule posted at horseracingradio.net. Now just 13 days, 4 hours, 51 minutes until racing's championship days. My thanks to Mike Pons, to Mike Bagley, to trainer Ken McPeak, and to Michelle Hemingway, and, of course, Mario Pino for making this show possible here this morning. Kurt Becker for his stroll through racing history, and Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin just moments ago. Been a fun show. Back with a brand new edition next Saturday. Of course, tune in to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton to kick off the week coming up on Wednesday evening at 6 Eastern following race day presented by Twin Spires. Now for my producer, Lee Della Pina, in our Lexington studio, for Chauncey handling all of our social media here today, I'm Mike Pena. Thanks for listening. I know it's a bye week, but hey, we're back to 3-3. Go Steelers.